And welcome to the next 8-4 Play Podcast. I am your host, Mark Gaming Jesus McDonald. With us this week, we're down one of our regular members, but we added a bonus guest.
Well, two, actually, right?
That's right.
Brendan's two not here. Two of our regular members.
Yeah. They're off, like, actually having vacation.
I forgot about Brendan.
Yeah.
I was hoping Brendan might still show up.
Maybe so, he'll just bust through the wall like the Kool-Aid man, like partway through the show.
Hiroko is not here and just being very quiet. She's actually not here at all this week. And Brendan is not as well because it's actually holiday right now. It's Golden Week.
Golden Week.
In Japan.
It's gold.
But before we get into that, so, 8-4 Play Podcast, podcast about Japan and games and Japanese games. Because you might not know that. You might have stumbled upon us on giantbomb.com, our new home.
Yeah.
Which we're very happy about.
Welcome.
But we realized we didn't really intro ourselves last time, so we're going to kind of give you an idea what we're about. We're going to talk about a lot of news, and we're going to talk about what it's like to run an indie game studio with our very special guest,
friend
of the show. Ratings poison, but no, I'll explain that in a little bit. But we have here with us Jake 17-bit Kazdol.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
To the podcast.
Second time on the show.
So I joke about the ratings poison. Actually, last time you were here, we talked a little bit about Jake's worked on a lot of famous games, I guess. Very well-known.
Sega games.
Well,
he worked on Nintendo back in the day, too.
Quite commercially.
Rez, Space Channel 5, back in the Sega Japan days. And then when you were at EALA, you worked on the Steven Spielberg project LMNO, right?
Right.
And so last time you were on the podcast, you said, I mean, you didn't really say much of anything about that. What did you say that became news?
That the game was canceled, and it had canceled for like 2 years at that point.
Right.
I had no idea that it was going to become such a huge deal. I don't know what happened.
And so a lot about the game has actually come out since then. Matt Leone had that really in-depth story on 1UP, but it got tweeted everywhere. Wasn't it like a Britney Spears fan?
It was on entertainment sites, basically, like the kind of sites that like Shane Bettenhausen like bookmarks, basically. It was on those.
Yeah, because we were looking at the trackbacks of like where people were being referred from, and I was like, Britney Spears, like
BritneySpearsFan.com
or whatever. Yeah. And so we were like, holy shit. And you were messaging us. You're like, hope you fuckers are happy. Like, best ratings ever. Like, so we checked the numbers and it was like, what the fuck? It was actually our lowest rated
show. It was our lowest podcast ever.
But it got fucking picked up everywhere. Like, all the game news blogs. I actually don't know if I trust the numbers we get or not, because we've gotten, anyway.
Mm.
Anyway, so this time, though, we're on Giant Bomb. This is going to be big time ratings.
That's right.
I think actually a lot of people are going to be interested. So Jake now, for people who don't know, runs 17-Bit Studios, used to be Haunted Temple Studios. So that's actually first thing of big news that we'll talk about a little later. But so he's been working on Skulls of the Shogun. People might have heard about it. We'll talk about that in a bit also. But I think it's going to be cool to kind of get, now that indie is a thing now, you know, man. Being indie is so cool.
Right.
We're going to jump on that bandwagon.
We got a real life cool indie here.
That's right. Live one.
We captured one in the wild.
That's right. We're going to talk about
it. I'm a little too old to be a really hip indie. I'm kind of...
Right.
Yeah. You know, you're missing the horn-rimmed glasses as well.
Exactly.
But you run an indie studio, which is really cool. So we're going to talk about that. But before that, to get back to the introductions, so... To my right, JJ Granny Panties Epperson.
Granny Panties.
Yeah, and I actually don't know why you get that nickname, because I had it for last podcast.
And forgot.
We didn't end up using it.
Right.
But it seared into my mind, though, for obvious reasons.
Granny Panties.
Yes.
I can't imagine what that's about.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. I don't wear granny panties for what it's worth.
You sure
just
about
to be
that?
Totally clear.
I'm a 100% boxer guy.
Yeah.
Little TMI there.
Maybe we'll figure that out as the podcast goes on. But and then rounding out the cast, we got a smaller crew this week, is John, what did I have for you? Pigpen. Rick Yardy.
Pigpen.
Pigpen. You didn't take a shower yesterday. Because
nice. Glad the world needs to know about that.
Did you fix your water?
No.
No, our hot water heater is getting fixed like next Thursday. So yeah, basically we're going like 2 weeks without a hot water heater.
Ooh. It broke the day. I just want to say it broke the day that Jake got here.
Yeah.
That's right. You were the last person to use it successfully. That's all I'm saying.
The hurricane strolled into town.
Yes.
And boom, we're out of hot water.
Yeah. Ill omens began.
The whole reason I came back to Japan was to sit in the hot bathtub and you guys completely failed me.
You figured it out, though. You're going to the Sento.
The Sento doesn't open until, like, 1, though. I think that's what happened that first day. They were just opening when I went out. It was, like, after lunch already.
Sentos are public baths, for those of you who don't know. They're very popular here.
Yeah, and I'm actually really surprised that I thought people used them in the morning. But
you would think, but apparently I've been asking all my Japanese friends, like, no, Sento's a night thing. You go in, and at the end of the day, you go in and you clean up.
I think a lot of Japanese people do their showering and stuff at night, and that's probably why.
So that's part of what you get here on the 8-4 Play podcast. A little taste of
cultural insight.
That's right, Japanese culture. But
Japanese people. But shower at night.
There you go. For people,
shock stories I can tell you too about the pool there. That was some interesting stuff.
Oh right. Well, for people who are wondering, so what is our deal? So like we say at the top of the podcast, we're about Japan games and Japanese games. But basically, we're about Japanese games. And because we have a new audience on Giant Bomb, so
lots of awesome feedback we've been getting.
Yes.
Like tons of messages on Giant Bomb and on Twitter and everything of
the
new
community
new
is very engaged.
Yes.
And it's
awesome.
Engaging.
Super exciting.
So yeah, please.
A little bit more engaged than Gaff, I found. I'm kind of disappointed in my gaffers.
Why are you hating on Gaff, dude? They got a thread up. Like,
no, I just...
You post the podcast, and Gaff has a thread up like 3 seconds before you posted it.
I just want more posts in the Gaff thread, that's all.
So you're throwing down the gauntlet?
That's right.
You're doing like a Kickstarter Republic Neo-Gaff challenge. But for people who don't know, so people are like, oh, it's just another Giant Bomb. For people who don't know, like,
but a little better.
What makes us different? Oh, throwing gauntlets left and right.
It's Golden Week.
J.J. Epperson.
Anything can happen in Golden
anything
Week.
Anything goes.
So, okay. So, of course, we're going to talk about shit like Monster Hunter. We talk about Tales games are actually mentioned on this podcast. I don't think you'll ever hear that on the Giant Bombcast. Alternately, you'll probably not hear about Mortal Kombat too much on our podcast.
That's true.
Except for us like mocking it. and we haven't really talked much about Saints Row the Third, although we're not against it.
No, I really want to play that game.
I hear good things.
I played it for like an hour and then my save game disappeared and then I never played it again.
So we've that's a great story.
Yeah, thank you.
We've always been focused more on Japanese games. We're going to try to do that even more now because we're not changing really, but
a lot of people
got that taken care of.
You guys do all live in Japan and you do play a lot of Japanese games more than most people probably back in the West.
Exactly.
Jake like threw up when he like got here and heard that I was playing the Dragon Quest beta. It's like basically the Dairy Queen beta.
Dragon Quest beta. I don't know what you're talking about.
But you know, we got a lot of feedback also, like people who are like, oh my god, they're changing, they're becoming like Giant Bomb, they're ditching the nicknames, blah blah blah. We got a ton of feedback saying not to do that stuff. So
yeah,
don't worry, that was just like a 1 week.
Don't worry, all the bullshit up front is still gonna be there.
As you're witnessing
all
right
this
now.
Crap, exactly. The first half hour is still gonna be pretty much worthless and skippable. So
something else worth pointing out too, though, I think is really important, is to know what we do,
right.
Which is, are you getting into that? Because you
no,
should,
go because
that we localize video games. We
try,
that's our main business. We do a lot of other stuff too, but our main business is translating games from Japanese to English, also English to Japanese, and therefore
to every other freaking language. In my case,
we've done that as well. That's right. We did Skull of the Shogun in like 42 languages. But basically, our core business is translation, and we are really tight with a lot of publishers and developers.
They're our clients, basically.
Yeah. Clients and friends, and sometimes. So
what you're getting
family.
To is we are totally untrustworthy.
Exactly. Don't trust the word we say.
Yeah. We are biased. We are biased back and forth all day long. Biased for days.
Biased for days.
Please do not hold us to the standards of like a gaming journalist. We
sometimes
are
people
not
complain
gaming
about like we'll say because on the flip side, however, I will say we also don't really. Like, cut, like, we are basically,
no,
if we feel something, we basically say what we feel.
Let people determine that for themselves, but there are things that there are games. What we generally try to do is if we are working on a game or something, we try to either not talk about it or we just talk about it in a factual manner.
Right.
And not a, like, hey, you should buy this game.
Right.
Mostly, I mean, it doesn't really make sense anyway because we're almost always talking about the Japanese version of the game. And by the time it comes out in America, it's pretty much known that we worked on it. So, but absolutely, like, if you're up in the, like, games journalism conflict of interest camp. Like, we are absolutely a huge conflict of interest. Don't trust what we say. I just put it that way. Like, just don't trust what we say.
Yeah.
And we have our friends on. We advocate their games. Bicycles of the Shogun coming sometime.
Pitch into the Republic Kickstarter.
There you go. I mean, we straight out advocate our games. So that is another difference from the Giant Podcast, Giant Bombcast. Those guys are trustworthy.
They're professionals.
They have scruples. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we wear our badge proudly. And
that's right.
And the reason I brought up earlier about that is because, you know, some people were like basically, you know, like... they were like, basically, you know, oh, you know, those guys are, why are journalists complaining about this or that or the other thing? And it's like, just to be clear, we are not journalists.
Yeah.
We're former journalists. Mark used to work, Mark and I both used to work at EGM, and Mark on the official PlayStation magazine and Gamers.com and 1UP and blah, 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 but not anymore. So
Gamers.com, there was a funny discussion on the last
on Giant Bomb,
yeah, on the Bombcast about Gamers.com.
It was weird too, because we were just had that same conversation with someone the night before, like just the night before, and then they like told the same story on their show. It was really weird.
So that's basically it. And then also they actually play games, and we mostly just talk about them. I mean, I play a lot of games.
I play games.
I know. Yeah, we all kind of play games. You guys play more games than I do, but we're very busy. That's our excuse. But we try to play the big new releases or the up and coming things like Phantasy Star Online 2.
Yay!
Which JJ has been playing.
So I kind of went through Diablo 3 withdrawal after the open beta ended. And just as I was going through withdrawal, Phantasy Star Online 2, the closed beta, kind of landed in my lap.
So did you sign up for that or what? Did you-
no, I got an invite from... he's going to kill me that I forgot his name.
Kyofu,
yes.
Oh, okay. So you can invite your friends.
I think so. Like, I think they give you invites and then you can invite other people. Nice. I don't know if I ever had any, but the beta's over now, just for what it's worth. And I'm going through Diablo withdrawal, Phantasy Star lands in my lap, and I'm playing it.
It's a rebound? Is that what you're trying to say?
It's kind of the rebound. And my first impression wasn't very good.
Why not?
Because they kind of... interject a whole bunch of story into the tutorial missions, and it's just really bad.
Like, why?
It's just like, you know, what you expect from like a typically anime, bad characterizations, just really annoying in the way sort of stuff.
Fortunately, what are you talking about? Phantasy Star Universe had like the best story ever.
I know, exactly. And like when
Phantasy Star Online is known for great story.
I know. But the thing is, like, they interject it into your missions and stuff like that. Right. Well, this is the tutorial. I don't want to like cast a bad light on the game yet, because once you get past the tutorial, they kind of just let you do whatever.
So tell us about the tutorial real fast. Sum it up. What was going... give us the summation of the story.
Basically, so you start in the, like, the green forest area, and then you go through it, and then monsters show up, and you're like on a training mission.
Okay.
So, and it teaches you how to, well, in my case, shoot, and how combos work. Mm-hmm. And you have a partner next to you. His name is Iphon, but it looks kind of like iPhone.
Some people were talking about the iPhone guy.
Right.
Somebody was talking on something that looked like an iPhone to you, saying, hey, now use the B button to
blah, blah, blah. And he's like,
it's
a
coming to iOS, right?
In some form, it is coming to iOS. But he's like a total wiener, loser, like annoying guy that I wish I could just leave behind and never see again.
Wait, annoying in like a Navi type way where he keeps piping up when you don't?
No, it's just whenever he's, you know, whenever he's speaking, it's like, oh my god, I'm so scared.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and just, well, whatever.
It's good voice. Is it voiced?
It is voiced in Japanese, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
you're basically saving his ass over and over.
Over and over. And then, like, one of your, the real hunters shows up and then helps you kill these things called darks or whatever. They're these like weird spider monsters.
Okay.
Anyways,
darks.
So you're playing alongside.
It's not a good name.
Not a good name.
This is you doing this alone for the tutorial?
Yeah, you go through it alone at first with your AI partners.
Okay.
Which actually, later on in the game, you can hire AI partners when you don't want to play with other people or whatever, which is kind of cool.
That's interesting.
And they actually have lines and speak to you and stuff like that.
Huh.
Which is cool.
Very interesting.
But yeah, once you get out of the tutorial, it's pretty much Phantasy Star. You go on missions and kill stuff, get loot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three classes, a hunter, a mage, and then like a
force,
shooter dude.
I believe you mean.
A force. And, you know, you can pick your race from like a robot dude.
So far, you haven't said anything that sounds different from PSO1, though. What's the difference? Like, what's new?
Well, okay. And this is where kind of like the problems come in, is like the game's UI is kind of a mess.
Okay.
Mm.
Because it kind of tries to marry a whole bunch of different quest systems from other games. So you've got like the quest system from Monster Hunter or Phantasy Star, where you go to like a quest counter, mm-hmm. get a quest, gather up your friends, go out and do the quest.
Okay.
But then there are also these things called matters, and you have this thing called a matter board, where like you have kind of like general quests you need to do, like go and find and get the special item from a monster while you're out in a quest.
Okay.
Okay.
And
like subquests.
They're kind of like subquests, but they can be done at any time. And then after that, there are WoW-like quests that you get from regular, you know, NPCs out in the stage or out in the lobby. And you also do those while you're out on the quest that you get from the quest lobby.
So there's like requests.
It's not requests. It's like quests.
Quests and requests.
Quests, subquests, and... Oh, I see. Yeah, and requests.
And right. Another... Jesus Christ. They're basically like two kinds of subquests, it sounds like.
Right.
Yeah, with the traditional quest structure.
Right. And it's just like, why... For me, it just doesn't make any sense, like, why there needs to be three different types of quests completely separated from everything, like, each other, like, UI-wise. Why can't I just go, like, to the quest counter and...
I see you want one place
everything in one
like,
place.
Yeah.
What am I trying to do
can
right
Can you be
now?
Doing multiple things at once?
You can do multiple things at once,
so you have,
yes.
like, two or three quests that are activated at a certain time?
Right. And you can do them at any time, which is nice, because it's really good for grinding. But
yeah,
at the same time...
I like this concept of there being three right. different kinds of quests anyway. That sounds kind of cool.
The problem lies within that you are... Amongst all those subquests, you're still doing the one or two main quests over and over and over again. So, like, I'm going and killing
the
four lion
beta,
dudes.
Though?
Well, and that's another thing. I it may be just because it's a beta, and this is an MMO. Things change
right.
pretty drastically, as I saw in Diablo 3.
It's an MMO, you mean, right? It's four player, isn't it?
Well, it's four player, but there is a... Actually, no, because...
Oh, wait, there's actually... Aren't there battles that were,
there,
like, 16 people fighting once or something?
There are multiple party quests and stuff like that.
Multiplayer.
Well, yeah, something like that.
Game.
And
moderately multiplayer online.
Moderately multiplayer. Yeah,
I'm just gonna stick on mostly. Until we figure it out.
Mostly multiplayer.
So okay, I hear you about the. So basically, it's more you're just complaining about the UI thing. I want
the UI, and the UI is kind of a mess, but the game itself is fine.
Do you have to go back to the people? Okay, I got your three mag rappies or whatever.
Yeah.
Killed. I'm
yes.
gonna, go back to you and find you in order to get my reward.
Yes.
Okay.
The nice thing is they're all pretty much always in the same place, but like it's...
That's my thing, is yeah. if you can easily tell, okay, great, I got the third, you know, whatever, die, forgetting all my Phantasy
right.
Star references, but I got my third, whatever, item, tooth, or whatever I needed to go get. Now I need to go back and find the person. Shit, how do I do that? Now that's when like the UI...
That's when you go into the UI and look at your list of quests and be like, oh, I've got to change it back to that guy. And then you go back and
mark him on a map or something?
Well, he'll have like a green notification over him if your quest is finished.
So what about the... is the functionality about like, don't you have your own apartment?
There is a My Room thing that you can rent using real money. I didn't use it, but there's like a temporary lobby that you can go into that's free.
Uh-huh.
And you can bring your friends into, and you can do quests over and over again if you'd like.
So what else? Like, how is this different from Phantasy Star Universe or Phantasy Star Online? Functionally, like, well, let's talk about gameplay for a little bit. So
okay.
You can jump.
You can jump.
Are you jumping a lot?
You are jumping a lot. There's a lot of the times there will be ledges that you jump on, and there will be, like, boxes that you can get Meseta and
sure.
Monomates from. And all sorts of other
Monomates.
Stuff.
Haven't heard that in a while.
That's what I was looking for. Yeah. Third Monomate.
Diamates.
So, but you're not jumping like for combat reasons. You're only jumping
well,
to like, get to the next area.
There are combat reasons for jumping because some of the times enemies can't hit you if you're in the air.
Yeah.
Or like if you're standing on top of a ledge, sometimes the enemy will like come up to the ledge and you and like in my case I'm a ranger and I can't shoot them because like the angle's not good. If I jump up in the air though, I can hit them when they're like right up against
that
the wall
cool.
and stuff like that.
It's the same basic combo like light heavy attack like the kind of the
yeah and it's timed
yeah.
and there's like I think you can have up to four attacks per weapon. and you can equip three weapons at once.
Oh.
So you can have, like, there's a lot of room for customization and, you know, like, customizing your gameplay style within one specific class, which is pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah.
The problem, I guess, is, for now anyways, there's not a lot of skills for the gun using ranger type right now. I, like, had, like, I use bazookas mostly, and I had, like, two skills. The regular shot and then another kind of...
Oh, okay.
And that was all the way up to level 5, which took me a good 3 hours or so to get to.
Aren't the monsters, though, like, way more intricate than they were in PSO? Like, from the little bit that I played, what was last TGS when we played it, I think?
Yeah.
It was like, you know, you could, you're, like, doing Monster Hunter type stuff, like breaking parts and, like...
Bosses,
you know,
are like that, yes. Regular enemies are pretty much standard, like, MMO fodder. You go up to them and they die.
You just hack away at them.
Wait, when you when you break a part of a boss, does it drop a piece of loot? Or is
I believe
cut,
so.
You can cut tails and stuff, can't you, Monster Hunter? Okay. And then, like, also, wasn't it there, like, there are these sometimes when you have these special boss battles where, like, other parties who are playing team up with you?
Yeah, and there's actually, it's not even just bosses. There are areas that are multi-party areas.
Really?
Where, like, you can have 16 people or more on a map.
See, that's awesome.
Wait, so what happens when you go into a multi-party area? Do the other people just appear, and then when you leave it, they just disappear?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of cool because those people, as they're killing monsters, like, they, I guess you resonate off of each other, and you give each other bonuses and the attack bonuses and stuff like that, which is pretty neat.
Have you fought any bosses in the...
No.
Okay, because I'm very interested about that. Phantasy Star Online, I think, still has some of the best boss fights ever in any game. Almost all the bosses. The dragon was kind of weak, but after that, all the bosses were amazing. And one thing I'm curious about is if the... I guess the latency or whatever is such that they can actually use the jumping in...
Right.
As part of battles. Like, if they can expect you, okay, like in a single player game, it would, okay, now the boss is going to attack low, you have to jump at a certain time, or if that's like, no, you know what, that we just can't detect with that fine accuracy when you're doing it, because when we played it at TGS, it just kind of seemed like old PSO, which is kind of like, yeah, it was pretty much synced up for each individual player, but it wasn't that... It hadn't advanced at all in terms of, like, reflexes or timing or...
Yeah, I wish I could say either way, but jumping seems to have an effect, at least against regular enemies.
Like, you're actually jumping to dodge?
I mean, I'm never jumping to dodge, because I'm always fighting from, like, 20 feet away, but...
Oh, right, yeah. Right. Well, what about mags?
I was just going to ask.
I didn't get a mag.
Like, but you can. Have you seen
you
people
can
with
get,
mags?
You can get a mag. I unfortunately was
I'm
not
so
able
excited
to.
About that. I hope you can customize them and everything the way you used to.
I think you can. And like, and actually, in the tutorial, the pro hunter guy comes in with a mag and starts fucking tearing shit up,
oh,
which
really?
Is pretty cool. Yeah.
I want a Dreamcast.
Do you know what you have to do to get one? Why you haven't gotten one?
I think there's just like a certain quest that you have to do, and then you get access to. Yeah, there's a lot of quests that unlock certain parts of the game that actually probably should just be unlocked. Like, there was a quest that I had to do that allowed items, like when my bag is full, allowed items to go straight from my bag all the way to the I guess my locker you would call it,
right?
Whereas before, like, if your bag was full and you were in the middle of a quest, you basically just had to throw something away.
Right.
Right.
So just, it's like a bonus,
like,
thing.
I got that.
I guess they're really trying to extend the gameplay out as much as they can.
I think that's probably actually for, like, tutorial reasons.
Right, but I got that in, like, level 4 or 5.
They don't want to hit you with too much.
It's that was kind of annoying, and probably something that'll be fixed at some point.
Let me ask you a question. What about, I know it's still the beta, but do you understand at all how this free-to-play stuff is going to work?
So, and this is, like...
Yeah, I was worried that you'd have to buy your mag, actually. That would be...
I felt so relieved when I actually saw what they were doing. Basically, it's like costumes.
Really?
Yeah. You pay for these scratch tickets that get you costumes that don't have any effect on your character other than how they look.
Wait, you pay for scratch tickets? You don't even get to pay for what you want? You have to just pay for, like, a lottery?
No, yeah, you just pay for the lottery.
Wait, do we know...
That's interesting.
I can't imagine that funding the entire game, though.
It seems you'd be surprised in Japan. Like, the Tales games, like, all the... There we go, talking about Tales. All the DLC is, like, costumes, and they're expensive.
Let me tell you
bought.
What, Mark. The costumes that come with the game make you look like the craziest...
Clown.
outer space fairy.
Wait, are they like the Jester fantasy?
Yeah, it's just like you look ridiculous. You are hard pressed to find a outfit that does not look retarded. So you will probably want to do
this. I'll pay.
Yeah. And actually,
what else? You don't.
Well, there
weapons?
Are perishable items that, like for instance, change the element assigned to whatever weapon you have. You can change it to like a fire or
that sounds
light.
More like yeah.
Yeah, it's stuff that like.
But you have to buy that stuff. You can't find that naturally or whatever.
There is a way to do it, I think, because there's this like weird weapon merging system that they have that I didn't really get. It's nice because like there's really nothing in there that will make or break your character or give you an advantage over somebody else.
So far. In the beta.
Yeah.
Are you able to actually buy stuff in the beta?
Yeah. They give you a shitload of points to mess with too. I went in and did like I scratched for like an hour trying to get all the items in this one set because if you do that you get to be a magpie? The little chickens?
Magrabby.
They have like a Magrabby outfit that you can get.
You mean
if you get everything.
A rappy.
That's right.
Rappy.
A rappy outfit that you can wear. And it totally fucks up every cutscene you're in because you're like taking up 90% awesome. Of the screen.
You guys saw it's old news now, but did you guys ever actually watch the intro to that game? The intro is amazing.
It's all over
so
the beta.
Good.
They like play it on the TVs in the lobby and stuff.
Just you can't
the music.
Not. It's the music in that in the intro was incredible.
It's
it
fully
like,
orchestrated.
It is Phantasy Star Online music and it's awesome.
No stupid like nonsensical English being thrown in. Anywhere.
I did not hear
their
any like
those
weird
theme songs, man. PSU, holy crap.
Okay. But yeah, like so, and you know, it's great that this is free to play because I think I'd be a lot more negative about the game if it was like a $60, you know, pay by month MMO. But since it's free to play and then like they've promised to do like pretty big updates every 2 or 3 months, you know, I'd be hard pressed not to find a reason to just install it and have it on there and play it whenever I'm not doing something.
Cool.
Like I'm actually missing it now. Like, cause it ended a few days ago and like yesterday I wanted to go in and play it, but it wasn't there. And I was like, oh fuck, this is not
cry
cool.
A little bit.
I went and played Dota 2 instead and it just wasn't the same.
All right.
Wow. You heard it here first. Phantasy Star Online 2 better than Dota 2.
It's just, I'm really terrible at Dota 2.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
All right. Well,
buying
what
a
else?
PC.
What else sucker. Is anybody? Been playing. You've been playing anything else?
Dragon's Dogma.
Oh, there you go.
Ooh,
Dragon's Dogma demo. So
opinion is divided on that one.
It
really?
Is.
Holy crap!
Yes, hotly divided.
Hotly divided.
Yes,
I've seen pretty
the
much
Twitterverse.
A lot of good stuff.
You've been reading Gaff.
I've been reading Gaff.
Yeah, which was great. Gaff is super positive on it. So, case in point, I think we've said before that we did some work on Dragon's Dogma.
Right.
So yeah, bear that in mind. But. How awesome was it?
So, with that in mind,
how amazing, on a scale of 10 to 12, was Dragon's Dogma?
I would say it was a 13. I actually went into that demo expecting not good things, just from, like, you know, I haven't played it yet. Like, people have played it, like, last, I don't know, E3 or last TGS, and, like, constantly it was like, I was hearing all these different problems about the game.
It's been pretty much the same demo at every trade show for the last year.
And actually there were previews out that people were saying, like previews where people were saying that the game was bad.
But then there were also, that those previews generally were old. There was kind of this like surge uprising of people, especially when they were seeing videos, when they were seeing farther along parts of the game where people were like, holy shit, this game actually looks amazing. Like, they were seeing the open world stuff. There was those OXM videos from official Xbox magazine in Europe where the guy played at night. It was the first place a lot of people had seen a lot of parts of the game. And like, at night, that game is just fucking like pitch black. Like,
it's so awesome.
You have a lantern. I don't know if you've seen this, Jake, but
sounds really good.
It's like, if you are out at night, you are fucked. I mean,
you need a torch or a lantern or something, I guess.
Or like a light arrow
and also the fucking skeletons and like liches come out, and so it basically like becomes kind of almost like a survival horror type game. You can only see with your lantern, like, you know, 5 or 10 feet in front of you.
Dude, I've always wanted games to do that. I'm so tired of them not.
Dude, you got to see.
I wanted
this
so badly with some of the Skyrim upgrades.
Yeah, yeah.
You can like have it where it's really dark and you have to have a torch going into these caves. Like that's what it should feel like. It should be like totally all artificially illuminated.
Dude, and you can make fighting the griffin at night. Yeah. It's like amazing because you can barely catch its shadow going through the sky if you're like, you know, really paying attention. It's like super awesome.
Am I the only one that bothered in Skyrim like that there were candles lighting?
Yeah,
bothered
the hell out of me. It drove me crazy. Who the fuck
is lighting these candles? Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, make it magically lit or something.
Yeah,
like,
do some sort of cool, you know, I mean, they should have had super dynamic lighting. Apparently, there's a you know, a mod
right
that you can plug in that makes it awesome that way.
Right, makes it
creepy and, like, you know, you can't see stuff and, you know, you're, like, super hyper aware. You're, you know, your senses are all super heightened. And that's what it should be like going into these caves. I mean, you're trekking into these crazy forgotten tombs. Like, it should not be lit up and, you know,
totally
easy jazz going and candles and, you know.
But you, that said, you got super, super, super into Skyrim, right?
I did.
Huge Skyrim fan.
I was a huge fanatic before it came out, and then it came out, and it was awesome. I never finished it because I just hit a point where I was like, God, I'm really busy. Like, I'm never going to finish this game, so I'm going to just stop playing.
Finishing Skyrim is kind of like, to me, it's like, you have your main story, but it's like, you're just going to play that game.
Right, but you could just keep playing it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's there's always things to find and stuff to do.
Yeah.
And I'm actually really excited. They just announced the DLC's coming.
That's right, this summer.
And, the Fallout was the same thing. Fallout 3 was a phenomenal game, one of my favorite games of all time, but I never finished it, per se. I didn't even finish the storyline because I just spent too much time screwing around.
Right.
But the...
Who turned you on to that Fallout?
I think it just looked rad.
No.
Was it you?
Yes, it was me.
I don't recall.
I came to your apartment.
I have no recollection of it. Oh, no, you're right.
Dead Space, you're right. And Fallout 3 and changed your life.
Yeah, you did.
Let's just put that out there.
No, I remember that now.
I actually fell asleep, and you got up, and then you were still asleep when I woke up, and I'm like, wow, Jake is sleeping late. And you're like, yeah, I was up till 5 a.m. playing Fallout 3. You were not interested at all to begin with. You were
That's right.
Fuck this game. And then
because I had played the beginning of it, and the beginning I did not like. Before you even get outside, I was like, this is kind of clunky, and like, I'm not really sure this is my kind of game.
Yeah, the vault, but you're like, and then this happened. And then, I mean, you were like a 10-year-old on the playground. You're like, and then I met this guy, and then he had this gun, and then I got that, and then I went and did that, and the other thing, and like,
that game blew my head off. It totally changed my life. Like, those kind of games, like, I hate to admit it, I totally prefer the aesthetic of Skyrim, but I think that Fallout 3 was a much more interesting game. The survival aspect, like, you're just constantly scrambling to stay alive. Like, you're always looking for bullets, you're always looking for, you know, health, you're trying to stay alive, you're trying to stay out of poison.
You're pretty much okay.
Skyrim, you're kind of a badass. Like, from the get-go, you kind of, like, I never really get in trouble fighting. I mean, some of the bosses, some of the Lich Kings and the tombs and stuff are tough, but it never had that sense of, like, desperation. Like, where in Fallout, you're like, I just gotta find a place to sleep tonight, man. Like, I gotta find some food.
Yeah.
I'm freaking out, man.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, that pressure was something that was really original to me, and I just thought Fallout 3 was phenomenal. And that being said, I never played through the DLC because I got busy with other stuff, but I'm hoping that the Skyrim DLC is going to be sort of, you know, more one-off, quote, compact mission style with kind of a defined goal and maybe like a new area that's like, you know, smaller that I can be like, listen, I'm going to get through this and like accomplish something.
Yeah, hopefully you go somewhere else in the world that you haven't already been 15 million times through Skyrim.
I wonder if they'll incorporate some of the mods. You know, there was that video that Todd Howard from Bethesda showed off at, I think it was DICE, but they had kind of a week where they just had everybody go nuts there on the team and make different weird mods. And I think some of that is being incorporated into, I mean, it's definitely going to be into future games.
I really only want the Randy Macho Man Savage.
That was amazing.
Randy Macho Man Savage. Dragon Shout mod.
Yes.
And I guess, of course, are all the Connect shouts or whatever that's going in there as
Actually,
well.
Actually, I wish my laptop could handle it. There are so many cool mods now. I mean, there are so, like, I just kind of every once in a while I go browse and I'm like, man, if my machine could handle this, you can do so much stuff with that now.
It's like a multiplayer one.
But just the look stuff alone. I mean, just like all the different dynamic lighting it looks phenomenal. If you have a big beefy machine, you can make that game look as good as you want. And my old laptop just won't handle it. So
that series on next gen, that's a series where it's like next gen is actually really going to matter. A lot of these series, you're like, okay, like, you know, Mario is going to look better. Like, even Zelda is definitely going to look way better. That's going to
Dragon's
make so
Dogma
much
is going to run at 60 frames per second.
That would be nice. I will say that for the demo, just to get back to Dragon's Dogma.
Right.
We probably should, but I will say that shit is the shit where it is really going to matter. That shit actually kind of needs next gen.
Yeah.
I think it still hasn't even come into its own because it is going to really.
The problem is, like, it's all those Morrowind games, or what the hell they're called.
Yeah.
Elder Scrolls.
Of all of them, this aesthetic is by far my favorite. I mean, I'm half Norwegian. It's I have the only- like, this love of Norway, or like just the Viking lore, but just like that cold, frozen world. It's bitter. It's harsh. There's like so much cool design in that game. I love the just the look, and I love the feel of it. And I know they're not going to do that again because they're going to move on to some other, you know, part of the world. And so the next game will not be set in the same world.
Which but the thing is, like all the other Elder Scrolls games, like their aesthetic was like it looks like poop.
Yeah. I was going to say. We've had this talk before, and before this, it was like a 10-year-old's fucking drawing on their folder at school. It's like it's kind of a dog, but it's got crab claws on it.
Fallout like, 3, I gotta say, the enemies, this? I was like,
oh, it's awful. Man, the aesthetic is terrible. Like the design is the execution is good, but the design, the base, what it's based off of, and not the world. The world,
the
is
world
cool.
was good.
The enemies
good.
Is are shit. Like let's just throw it out there. Like are garbage. And even it's getting better with each game. But even still, in
I would
Skyrim,
say Skyrim is a pretty big leap.
It's, but even so, and I would say like some of the enemies because it's more kind of. Typical D&D kind of style, which I think is great. Dragon's Dogma is totally that way.
Yes.
And I'm fine with that. But it's when they do some
we'll get
kind
back
of...
there eventually.
We're just taking the long way.
Yeah.
It's a holiday. We got time.
When they do some kind of original enemy design, it's just kind of like, yeah, I don't like... Not really feeling... that I'm looking forward to improving anyway. But back to Dragon's
How
Dogma.
About those Dragon's Dogma enemies? Yes. I will say that I thought the demo was just straight up awesome. And it has nothing to do with the fact that we had some involvement in this game. In fact, I personally had almost nothing to do with it except for the very beginning.
Which is,
and
like, is it just a Japanese demo?
No, it's both English. Stores. Yeah, it's, both stores. Something about the demo, by the way, too. Yeah. It's not the final game. Like, that demo is the same demo from whatever the last event was, which is a while ago.
TGS?
Like, I've been told that the final game is polished more than the demo. So
wow.
Don't expect the exact same thing out of the final game from the demo. But
I noticed a little... I mean, one thing that I am hopeful for, and we haven't seen this game since, like, last year.
Yeah, we worked on it a long time ago.
So what we know about it is not, you know, applicable. But it's been every time I see it, it's improving in the like the frame rate category. Mm. And like you said, it didn't bother you. It didn't bother me like so much so that I was like, ah, you know, screw this. But it did. I was like, man, I wish this was a little smoother. Like,
did you play it on PS3 or Xbox?
PS3.
Okay, me too.
There were like some hiccups.
Yeah, I heard the Xbox version was a little better, and there were like there was like a trick you could do to set your
clipping issues or something. Both of them have certain issues I read. But
yeah,
okay. But let's talk more in generalities. So hopefully, people. So the demo's out there.
Yeah,
check it out.
Two quests.
Come back. We'll wait. All right.
And if you want it to be like extra hard, kill your pawn by throwing him over the balcony in the first quest.
Oh, pro tip.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you can take on the boss of that quest by yourself. And
is that
hard.
The one with the like what do you call that?
The Chimera.
The Chimera, yeah.
Chimera, yeah.
That Chimera fight was fucking awesome, man. You like jump on his back and you like cut the snake's head off and you're like riding the monster, stabbing it.
I do
like,
love it when
you're
like,
doing all this stuff that I always wanted to do in Monster Hunter, but you can't.
When the snake head dies and it's like just fucking like limp on there, it's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Like, especially like the goat head. Like it just like
oh yes, it looks so fucking. Its tongue is like
right. But
maybe
it's cool because this game this game is essentially next-gen Monster Hunter in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, this demo
it definitely
makes it seem like that anyways.
Takes cues from
right.
Monster Hunter in the big... The thing is, the demo is, I mean, what amounts to like two big enemy fights.
Right.
Which there are in the game. Like, a big enemy is like a big deal, kind of how it is in Monster Hunter. The one thing that I will say from the video is the thing that got me the most excited is the how you can grapple on enemies.
Yes.
You can grab onto them. And there was a fight where this dude like grabbed onto a harpy and then the harpy flies up and, you know, I mean, probably like 100, 200 feet in the air. And then he dropped off of the harpy. He didn't end up doing it, but he was just trying to do onto the fucking back of a Cyclops.
Right.
And then was just fucking tearing at it from the back
that's
of it.
So
I mean,
awesome.
That shit is amazing.
I have a question. You mentioned this is sort of like the next generation Monster Hunter, but the aesthetic is totally Western, right?
Oh, yeah.
Completely.
Do you think that's like a purposeful sort of attempt to bring this big franchise to like a Western audience?
Absolutely.
I think so,
to some extent, yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, this game isn't online. There's no multiplayer. So that's one thing that's very different from Monster Hunter. But I think I'm kind of hoping maybe that's like their way of like inching in without totally stepping on Monster Hunter's toes. Maybe in the future, like a sequel or something, it'll be multiplayer. I hope.
Yeah.
The weird thing
is I've never seen anything that has said anything from Capcom, any quotes, anything that's been like, yeah, this is Monster Hunter for
of
the West.
Not. Yeah.
I think that they probably came at it more from a Skyrim. Like, we want a piece of that pie. Like, where Fallout and that shit is happening. Dragon's Dogma has been in the works since before Skyrim. But I think they saw, okay, RPGs are heading this way. We want a piece of that. And just being Capcom, it ends up taking a form where it has a lot of Monster Hunter to it.
Right.
Now, that said, yeah, when it becomes multiplayer and stuff, and I really... really am hopeful this is successful enough that we get some sequels, because I could see it taking that form. But it's already got this weird, interesting... It doesn't have real multiplayer, which a lot of people have been saying, man, I wish it did, because you have these AI pawns. Me too,
that was the first thing I thought.
But it does have this system where you can, like... which is really forward-thinking for a Japanese company, where you can, like, share... You raise your pawn. You have a number of AI companions, and you have your one... pawn that's your main pawn, where you basically like form them. You're like, you talk too much, or you should really, you should sit back more and cast spells, or you should charge in more. You're slowly tuning them this way, and of course they gain experience, they have certain items and whatever. You can then share this pawn online for other people to basically rent and take out on their own adventures, like hire like a bodyguard or something. And you can post them on Twitter or Facebook so that it's really, really? Easy to find.
That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Really yeah. easy to find. So I take, Jake's right hand man. What would the name of your pawn be? Do you name your guys do you role play when you name your characters? And
not too heavily, no.
What was your Skyrim character name? Do you remember?
It was Hikaru.
Hikaru?
Yeah.
What named after?
Because I was just screwing with the character creator, and I made this big techno Viking looking dude who had silver eyes, and like he looked like he was glowing from the inside. He had like this like I was screwing with the tattoos, and like he looked like he was like glowing with light scars, and I was like, dude.
All right, so
Hikaru means to glow in Japanese, and I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
I rent Hikaru.
I think I was drunk when I started that thing.
You were drunk, I'm sure. It wasn't anything else, I'm sure. It was drinking. So I rent Hikaru. And I take him out and we go on whatever adventures, and he might, when I fight like a Cyclops or something, he might know something about the Cyclops. He might be like, oh, you got to get on his back and stab him in the eye.
Wow.
And so he's saying that stuff because you've killed a Cyclops with him.
Wow,
yeah.
That's true.
That's
awesome.
So
that's kind of cool.
I didn't even know this.
Or he could learn it with me. This is how I understand it. He could learn it with me and he could come back to you. And when you talk to him, when you're fighting with him next, he knows this extra stuff.
Right.
But no matter
what. He's been there, man.
Yeah, exactly, man. He's been the shit. He's been deep in the shit. But
awesome.
When he comes,
that's actually really awesome.
When he comes back, he also has, I think they're crystals, some kind of crystals, some kind of currency that he's earning that's going to benefit you too. That he
wait,
gets.
You so you get something back from other people renting your pawn.
Yes,
yeah.
That's awesome.
That's why you got to really raise your pawn.
That's how
to
it
be
should
the very
be
best
because
be.
Like some games have done that sort of thing where you can like use someone else's character, but you never know about it or get anything from it.
It's really a great way of tying in the social aspect in modern video games,
right?
There you go.
Social gaming is really the future.
But it's like especially for a Japanese company, that is like amazingly forward thinking.
Right.
So. Anyway,
was that your idea?
Way back to the demo. Yeah, that was. I threw that in there. I was like, hey, why don't you guys do this and shut up and translate the innkeep what he says when you talk to him. What did you guys think of the demo, the gameplay? I mean, you played it at trade shows before,
right? So I played it at TGS, but like I didn't really kind of scream at me like this is something I want to play very much. Like it was very weird and choppy and I just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. But when I finally got to sit down with it and like on my TV in like the quiet,
what's a newer,
my quiet living room. Yeah. It's a little newer. And like, it just like immediately I was totally into it. And I was trying all sorts of different things. Like I think the Griffin fight is better than the
fight is so epic, man.
It is awesome. Like
so epic
because I've beat it like 3 or 4 times now, and each time I kind of beat it in a different way. And like it's
you're always the Strider chick, right?
You're always the Strider. Actually, I'm a dude.
Wait,
oh, so you can make your own character.
It uses the pawn that you make in the pawn maker,
like
the creator thing or whatever.
Okay,
and you can carry that over to
you.
The
apparently, you can carry that over to the retail game,
that's
which is great.
Cool.
But that's right. Yeah, I made my own character a chick because I always make my characters a guy. But in this game, you can make your character and your pawn. So I made my pawn a guy and made the character a chick. Using Mark's logic of I'd rather be staring at the back of a chick for like 40 hours.
I made my pawn my wife, and then I just made me like a linebacker.
Whoa,
TMI.
Whoa, yeah, that's some Freudian.
Well, no, apparently a lot of people did that.
All right.
But anyways.
No, it's totally normal.
Yeah.
It's very healthy.
Yeah, one normal. You can play games with your wife. Sure. It's fun. But like my favorite way to take down the griffin.
The pawn who you command and is subservient and you rent out to other players online. That's a totally normal.
She carries this bastard sword and like fucks shit up, which is great. Right. She helps. Anyway.
An image of does she look like her?
Sort of.
Do you look like you?
No, I'm like completely different.
You're like a huge Greek god. She's tiny real life.
I'm like a Brazilian soccer player and she's
all right.
Okay. So anyways, my favorite way to take down the griffin, like turns out like you can get launched onto his back.
Yes.
Or if he's down on the ground, you can get on his back.
So the pawns will say, I'm over here. Like I'll launch you into the air.
And so my wife launches me up onto the back of the griffin when he's kind of flying low.
God.
And so I get on the back and then like I get imbued with fire on my sword.
That is the best thing ever.
Right. Because like what you can do, you can get imbued with fire and use your bow to just like get it out of the sky, but that's boring.
Yeah.
Like
it's not boring when he goes up in flames in midair. But that is awesome.
That's a noob. Come on. That's like
dude.
Getting imbued with your bow.
Right.
Come on.
I get launched onto the back of the griffin, crawl up to its neck head region, and then use my like fire dagger or whatever, and I just start like
going to town.
Going to town on him.
Yes.
And then eventually, while I'm on his back, bursts into flames and
so
comes
awesome.
Crashing down into the ground.
That part is awesome. How it just comes down just unceremoniously, just like a fucking
and then
broken airplane.
All my pawns just like start focusing all their shit on it, and I'm just like going to town on his neck like some psycho crazy guy. And it's just like it feels so good.
It is the best feeling in the world. Like it's one of those games where like if you enjoy experiences that like get your adrenaline pumping, you will love it because it was like so awesome.
I think it's definitely like your guys' love of Monster Hunter partially coming through here because
probably.
It's like Monster Hunter where you can actually like feel like you're really impacting more so than Monster Hunter.
Mm.
The larger enemies also have different states where you can tell that they're getting damaged or, like you said, they're on fire or whatever. I like that you used imbued, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You can definitely...
I was actually surprised at myself that word actually came into my brain at that point. But yeah.
You know, the guy, the director of this game is the director of, what was it, Devil May Cry 3. And he is like a battle guy. Like, I remember when we first met him, like, that was his whole thing. It's like this, you know, they want to put awesome battle into a game like this, and I think from what little I've played so far, I feel like they've succeeded. Like the battles were
they're almost coming at it the opposite way from like where battle still seems like kind of an afterthought with Skyrim, right? It's about
right,
so much
definitely,
more
totally.
It's about the world, it's about do whatever you want to do,
right?
This game, it's like they're coming at it from battle being as good as single player, which is the reason that they're saying that it is still single player, that it's not multiplayer, is that you can't have that moment to moment reflex driven combat if you're doing online, even still with high speed internet. So that's the reason that they're doing that. Whether or not they can figure that out or whatever, that's true. But also they try to, you know, put in the open world, put in the story of like a Skyrim. Do a lot. Everything's voiced. Everything with characterization. The flavor of the game is very like George R. R. Martin. It's like very, very old English. I'm really curious to see what people are going to like about it. It was a bitch to work on.
Game of Thrones.
Say, but
I think more people will understand that than George R. R. Martin.
Yeah,
right.
Game of Thrones. But I think
Sarah Spellany.
Interesting and different. And what's that?
Sarah Spellany.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's not out yet, though, right?
No, actually, it comes out this
May?
Month.
Later this month.
I can't wait. I wish it was out before Golden Week. I would have played it all week this week.
So, anyway, Dragon's Dogma. Check that out.
Yeah.
Not biased at all.
Nope.
It's just amazing. It will change your life.
I'm actually seriously excited about it.
No, I am, too. Well,
no, John, when I got home, you were like, holy shit, I'm like really into this. It's amazing. And I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to enjoy it nearly as much as I did. But and I never really play, I usually play like the warrior class or the swordsman or whatever. Like I'm kind of a sword and shield guy.
Yeah.
But playing the strider with the bow was like so much fun that I think I'm gonna actually play. I don't know, do you choose your class for like the whole game or how does it work? You change classes?
Well, I don't
maybe
probably
you can change classes and there are like you can merge classes and there's all sorts of stuff.
Okay, well, maybe basically, I don't know. Well, basically, I'm gonna play with the bow, I think, from the beginning, because it was super fun, especially when someone else lights you on fire and you're shooting those fire arrows at them and everything. Oh, so much
cool
fun.
And you can do that with you can imbue defensive items as well.
Yes, you can have like a fire.
Is that why I was like glowing and stuff here and there? Like, it's because other people did stuff.
Your
to
pawns
me.
Were imbuing.
One thing I will say is the UI is kind of janky. Like when the pawn, like, I would suggest just turning off the subtitles. For
I turned
pawns,
off pretty much like everything except for the mini-map.
I had like four pawns in my fight, and like the left side of my screen was just like all text, like
so
all the time.
Some people don't know that. Yeah, that's something we should mention in the options. You can like check out the options before you start playing. Check out the options.
And it was night and day. Like turning off all that shit really made the experience a lot better.
Another thing too, just for people who might be interested in trying it, is apparently if you create your character in the demo, you'll be able to use it in the final game.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Talked about that.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't listening to that part.
But yes, that's why.
Did you guys know, by the way, that you can create?
This what happens.
Yeah, that's why I spent a lot of time making me and my wife.
Right. It's gonna carry over.
I missed that small detail about it carrying over. But.
Right.
So yeah, and when the game goes live, we'll publicize so everybody out there, all the listeners, can take their turn with your wife. We'll make sure
we'll put her up on the website. Yeah. Yeah.
Make her strong.
We'll have pictures and everything.
Yeah.
So you can.
That would actually be an interesting like crowdsourcing experiment. Like, would that benefit you if a lot of people used her? So maybe we should put all of our pawns.
Oh no! Yeah, we will. Yeah.
Nice.
We will for sure. But until then, why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, we're going to talk with Jake about running 17-bit and indie dev and all that fun stuff. And then after that, there's actually quite a bit of news. Nintendo had their Nintendo Direct since our last podcast.
Yeah,
they had their shareholders meeting. A lot of stuff with Atlus. Few different games to talk about with Atlus, Vanillaware, Call of Duty. John, I know you're very excited. Shinji Mikami's game, Bayonetta 2 or not. PlayStation All-Stars, god damn, Tokyo Jungle. You know,
we'll see. We'll see what we get to.
Yeah. So, yeah, see how much of that we get to, but we'll be right back. All right, we're back, and we're going to talk some 17-bit action.
17-bit.
Jake, who is wearing the kick-ass 17-bit t-shirt, I guess Google 17-bit, and you can probably find it. Actually, 17-bit.com.
17-bit.com. Yeah,
is that live?
I think it's live, but there's like nothing up. Maybe like I think just the
logo. Throw your logo, that's fine. People can see what they're doing. Are you going to be selling that t-shirt? You got to sell
it. I think
it.
We do have to. I think, you know, pretty much everybody who sees it wants it. So, you know, we share, you know, office space. Well, not office space, but the office right next to us is a t-shirt printing place that gives us a good rate. And the shirts are awesome. They're really good, awesome. Yeah, really good quality.
I thought the office right next to you was like a strip club.
That's
the office, like, in the next building. Our building. These guys are literally, like, one door down from us.
I see.
And above you is the
witch doctor's
circle. Yes.
Yeah, so that gets pretty exciting.
You guys work in an interesting place.
Yes, we do.
And your last office, what happened? So Haunted Temple Studios is what your studio used to be called.
Right.
And then...
up until about an hour ago.
And then something terrible happened and you decided to change your name to 17-bit.
Yeah, so we were working one night and we had a giant... it started raining in my office on my stuff. And I was like, what's going on? And I could hear the...
It started raining in your
office. In my office. Yes. Like from the ceiling, rain was coming down. And turned out a water main had broke upstairs. And we had like, you know, precious little time to salvage everything we owned pretty much. I was, you know, obviously totally flipping out.
You're lucky you were there.
Yeah.
The roof came in.
The night before, we were out all night with our producer drinking. And like we would come back to just... complete devastation.
But and eventually, when it started dripping, it just went.
No, it didn't. It didn't cave in. It just like you know, it's a 100-year-old building, and the water coming down was black. I mean, it's just like, you know, all the crap that's been, you know, in there for who knows how many
the
years.
Ooze.
It was really grim.
It was haunted.
It was grim. So we moved out. We got a good rate on the place next to us, which is way too big. It's like 2,500 square feet.
This
like,
is huge. There's
what, five of us in the building, so yeah. It's kind of stupid. But
do you guys play football sometimes?
We could. We're like, should we build a half pipe? Should we play baseball? Like, you know.
But I'm joking about that being the reason that it changed the name. It actually has nothing to do with it. But what? So yeah. So let's talk about that.
So the name changed. So I don't know if people haven't seen it. We did this really cool press kit that looked like old Sega Saturn games, and I made one starting. I think it was like GDC 2010
for Skulls of the Shogun.
Yeah. So it was a press kit that looked like an old Saturn game, and you know, kind of capture the feel of this old sort of retro feeling that I'm really going for with the whole series. And I had this kind of dumb, you know, name with it, but I kind of wanted to do a nicer one. It was like Hyper Mega 16 or something. It was kind of just supposed to call out like the Mega Drive, you know, Super right. Famicom era, even though it was a Saturn package, it's 32-bit, it's kind of weird, but whatever. Anyways, I kind of wanted to do it more seriously, and so I started looking at a bunch of logos and stuff, and I put together a big style guide, and I was talking to our mutual friend Evan Shamoon about it quite a bit, trying to think, like, how could I brand this series of games better? Like, how could I really, you know, work on this? And I went out one night with my friend Corey Schmitz. A bunch of indies were in town talking to Valve, yeah. So I was hanging out with Corey Schmitz, and I was telling him my idea, and he's a, you know, phenomenal graphic designer. So I was like, yeah, I'm working on this line for the game, and it's going to be like just post 16-bit, like kind of like the CD era, like right when all that stuff was kind of coming online. It was like way more storage space, and you know, it was still 2D games. It was before the 3D stuff, and I was like, it's going to be just post 16-bit, but like I don't know what to call it. You know, I've been thinking about these things. He's like, what about like 17-bit.
Wow. Said, yeah.
Damn it. That's good, man. Yeah. Yes. So I got him to help me out, you know, do some comps for a logo. And then we spent a whole day, one day, just going back and forth. And I picked one I liked and I did some changes to it, sent it back to him. He's like, oh, I like this. I don't like that. And changed it, sent it back to me. It was like real time moderated, you know, not moderated, but back and forth design. It was sure. Really, really fun. And by the end of the day, we had this kick-ass logo and everyone loved it. And I think I showed it to, you know, a couple people, and you were one of the first people who were like, dude, you need to just change the name of the studio to 17-bit.
Yes.
I was like, ah,
it so says what it is. I mean, what it is, what I know of what you're about and what you're wanting to do is basically, like, take the, like, how you remember, like, you know, Link to the Past or Super Metroid, or not even how that is, but how you remember it being. Yeah, which I think is like a big distinction, right?
Because right.
You go back and play some of those games now and you're kind of like, oh, you know, this is kind of a fucking pain in the ass. Like, this is really fucking unfriendly. Or like, man, when you die, you go back like 2 hours. Like, not that shit, but like your memories of the good parts.
When you first booted up Super Metroid, how did that feel?
The first time you saw it raining in Link to the Past.
Right.
Like the atmosphere and the like pure fun gameplay. Like just
there was like a realm of new possibilities. You're like, whoa, there's like already the rules are being changed, right?
Right.
Left and right. From like, you know, growing up with 8-bit stuff, I worked at Nintendo during the 8-bit days as a game counselor. I played every Famicom or, you know, Nintendo game known to man practically. And all of a sudden, when the Super Nintendo stuff came out, it was like the rules are being rewritten. Like, I don't know what else is going to happen. Like, oh my God, it's raining in Legend of Zelda. You know, it's nighttime. There's lightning going. Like, what other kind of crazy stuff is going to happen?
Right.
And those feelings, like, that's what I'm trying to recapture with this line of games.
Right, right. So you basically, I guess, heard this from enough people, and you had the T-shirts
and then
PAX East,
Evan, yeah. And then yeah, we showed it at PAX East. We put it into our trailer, and everyone
just
was
get
like,
it.
Everyone was just like, "What's 17-bit?" They're like, "Oh, that's awesome!" Like the T-shirt guys. They don't even play that many games. And the guy's like, yeah, I get it. It's like Super Nintendo, but like a little bit more. And like, you want to like, you know, kind of recapture that feeling. I was like, dude, why are you saying that? Yes, dude, exactly. Like, oh my God.
And so those guys are really fucking stoned, like 24/7. Yeah. So the fact that it's getting through to them, it's like, wow. All right. Yeah. This is definitely like a strong signal.
Yeah. So it was a huge hit. And then at PAX East, everyone's just like, what, 17-bit? What is that? What is it? Oh my God. I was like, you know, this line of stuff. And we're going to, you know, it's going to be a line of games within Haunted Temple, and everyone's like Haunted Studios and Haunted House Studios, and like, you know, no one can get it
right.
Like,
right. And I mean, right. That name kind of limits you to making only games with like ghosts and stuff in it, so.
Well, not really. And not any more than 17-bit limits you to making kidding. Like retro games.
Right, and the funny thing is, I mean, the Haunted Temple comes from my love of like Chinese vampire hunting movies, and like the ghost stories of like these old Chinese Hong Kong action films from like the 70s and 80s has nothing to do with Skulls of the Shogun, even though you end up haunting a bunch of temples.
That's true.
In Skulls of the Shogun. So, you know, and there was kind of like the whole just I love, you know, backpacking around Japan and like traveling up into the woods and seeing these spooky old temples and stuff. Like, it's always just been really exciting for me and really cool. And so, you know, it's like
a fine name.
I love adventure games and stuff. And so, you know, that's kind of where it started. But 17-bit, I think, is much more accurate to the kind of stuff that I want to do. And
the look of it all too very much evokes like Mega Drive and Super Famicom, like those two things. Although not in any copyright infringement
level way.
100%. So let's talk about. We've talked to you before a bunch about like Skulls and especially like your past work at Sega Japan and stuff, but I think something a lot more people like these days especially be interested about like is indie game dev, like how you started off, what it's like day to day, what all the stuff you do, that sort of thing. But why don't we start at when you decided to go indie? Basically, you were working at...
Was it Zombie? I was art directing on the downloadable title Blacklight Tango Down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been doing concept art, you know, for years. I worked on, I'd been doing concept art for forever on like Space Channel 5, Rez. At EA, I worked on Elemento. I worked on Command & Conquer 4. I worked on Boom Blocks. Then at
Command & Conquer 4, which never...
It came out.
It did?
Yeah.
With your designs in it?
There's some of my designs in there, yeah.
Okay.
For some reason, lighting and stuff like that.
That all got scrapped.
Well, the game what we were working on originally got... basically thrown out, but then we basically recycled all those parts for Command & Conquer 4, and then a bunch of new people came on. Anyways, it did ship. Then I was on Blacklight, and it was just all this, like, you know, years in a row of hard edge, really hardcore sci-fi stuff, and I wanted to do something really different. We had our first child, and I was kind of, you know, grounded, mostly. I mean, I don't want to say that way, but I mean, like, I wasn't, you know, going out, doing a lot of partying. Yeah, I would leave work, I would go home and help out. So I just started drawing, and I wanted to do something kind of totally opposite. Like, I used to love really cartoony stuff, and I wanted to play with some of that sort of 16-bit stuff. Like, I grew up, you know, with that era, like all of us did, and those genres just, like, aren't made anymore. Like, when's the last time you played something that felt like a 16-bit game? I mean, everything's morphed and evolved and it's ballooned into something totally different now, and that's fine, mm-hmm. but I miss the genres of my youth. I miss the Super Nintendo genres, and so I wanted to make something kind of cute and sort of, you know, cartoony and simple, and it started off just as an iPhone game, and I called my friend, you know, Barut, who was the lead AI engineer on the Spielberg project, and he wanted to leave and do some independent stuff, and he actually had an engine for a strategy game he was working on, and I said, hey, I've got these characters, I've got an idea for a game.
He was at EA LA.
He had just left, or he was leaving. I think he was just leaving EA LA. Yeah. And then he went on to do some freelance stuff, but he was working on this on the side. And both of us worked on it on the side for about 9 months. And then by about GDC of 2010.
But wait, so back up. But so you're at home with your kid and you start doing these sketches or whatever.
Yeah.
But what did you start thinking? Like, you know what? I want to be making my own game.
No, I mean, this was a game. This started off as a game. Like, I had a sketchbook, and I was like, you know, if I could make a game, like, what would it be? Like, if I could make anything and I wanted to.
So you started off thinking, I'm going to keep my day job, just work on this at night.
This is going to be like an iPhone game or whatever, you know. And the brute's like, yeah, you know, I have this other contract gig I got to do during the day, but at night, you know, let's just noodle around with this thing and start screwing with it. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's just do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going to be just a couple-month project, and then he, like... super PC hardcore guy, you know. He's like, I'm fucking Mac, I'm fine. I was like, let's just do it for Xbox. And I was like, oh, Xbox, yeah, okay, sure, you know, X and A indies game, whatever. Like, and so we started doing it on that, and you know, then we had a PC build, and kind of just it just became like a real game real quickly. And then, another friend Ben, who was also with us on Elemento at the time, he went indie too and decided to kind of help us out, and then he ended up coming on full time,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden, you know, I was running an indie game studio. And then, you know, we ended up getting funding, and we ended up getting some press.
You started wearing scarves, started hating on Japanese video games.
Hooray. But back up a little bit still. So you skipped part where you, like, quit your job.
Oh, yeah.
You skipped the part where you
Well, that's a whole other story. But yes, I ended up in sort of a rash decision, deciding to leave the company.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, you know, I found angel funding like literally the same weekend. I was like, I either going to get another job or I can kind of follow through with this thing that I've started that I think has a lot of potential.
Right.
So I found some angel funding enough to kind of, you know, pay us bits and pieces. And then it ended up being enough to pay us basically.
But there was not like a serious moment or even a night or a week of like, all right, I just had a kid. I have this job.
I'm not known for thinking things through per se. You know, I mean, like moving to Sega Japan was a rather rash decision too, and everyone thought I was insane, but it ended up being, you know, one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Right.
So this too, like I found myself out of a job for reasons I won't get into.
Right.
I rashly decided to leave the company, and I was just like, wow, whoops.
And you went back for like a little bit,
No.
I thought you like decided, oh, I'm going to go. And then you went back and you're like, yeah, maybe I can make this work.
No. Oh. I mean, I left. Those are all things we don't need to do.
Regardless.
That's all water under the bridge now.
All right.
I did find myself out of a job. And
for reasons that you...
Yes.
Yes, just to be clear.
I decided to quit.
Yes, rashly, quickly.
Yes.
Yes.
There were things going on that,
regardless. Yeah.
I was like, wow, I either have to go find another job, like, immediately, because I do have a new child and a wife, and all these things that need to be paid for, or, you know, I also have this, you know, this kick-ass thing that I really believe in that, you know, if I can find funding for, it would make sense to try to follow this avenue first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the game just started rolling, and then we started showing it around, and people really had a great reaction to it. And, you know, I think we actually debuted on the Giant Bomb Quick Look many years ago. I think that was 2000.
Oh, really?
It was spring 2010.
So you started doing a lot of press and, like, just, like, using your connections, getting people to see it, talk about it, getting previews and Edge and whatever. And started getting like some buzz and stuff. Right.
Thinking that we were 6 months away from finishing because, you know, even though I'd been in game development since 96 and in the game industry for a lot longer, I'd never run a project and I'd never tried to produce and schedule and manage all this stuff. And, you know, I had no idea what we were biting off.
Right.
And so we were just sort of nibbling at it and we had enough funding to kind of just keep working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always 6 months. Oh, we'll launch in 6 months. Oh, we'll launch in 6 months.
Right.
You know, 6 months go by. Oh, but we're
the game keeps
out.
Getting bigger and bigger.
Slowly gets bigger.
You add a single player. Like originally it started off, you were just thinking just a multiplayer game, right?
No, not necessarily.
Really?
I mean, and there wasn't like necessarily a giant story and stuff involved. It was going to be, you know, I was always looking at Advance Wars for inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, it might've been a lot more simplified and small.
Right.
At one point, but you know, I never really nailed that down, and it just sort of morphed into, hey, you know, we need character, we need some story, and then Ben, you know, was a good writer, and he was able to kind of, you know, flesh out some story stuff, and all of a sudden we're like, you know, this makes sense, and it started off with like placeholder stupid dialogue, like super ridiculous. Like at first, the idea was to do a little bit more, you know, classical Japanese sort of samurai drama stuff like this, and so we threw in this super goofy like temp dialogue, and everyone who played it was just laughing a lot, and I was like, huh. And everyone's like, no, this is great. I was like, yeah, don't pay any attention to the dialogue. It's just totally temporary. And I was like, no, this is awesome. It's stupid. It's hilarious. And I was like, wow, maybe. I mean, they're like, look at the characters. They're stupid, hilarious too. It's like, you got a point. So, yeah, it just kept evolving and became what it is.
Yeah, I'm excited for people because we asked people on the podcast to play the single player at PAX. But I guess you were just showing. It makes sense to show the multiplayer for more people to play it. But we did a lot of work on the single player story.
We were showing single player too.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
We were allowing people who were like individuals, they didn't have someone they wanted to play with. We were allowing them on the smaller laptops to play through the demo.
I'm really interested to see what people will make of the story because I'm pretty proud of it. Like, I think it came
out it's pretty awesome.
Good. Yeah.
I mean, it was really good before, and now it's just like standout hilarious.
Right,
I mean, people are just like laughing and guffawing like throughout the whole thing. And
cool.
And I think that, you know, it's going to make a big difference in just terms of character. I mean, I'm a big believer in character and a lot of personality in games.
Right.
You know? When you guys are talking about Phantasy Star, I'm like, God, like, it's like no personality. It's like the most bland thing. Yeah.
What are you talking about? The design in that game. All right, that's a separate topic.
Anyways, personality in games is a big deal for me. So.
Okay, but again, to go back, so you're working out of your house to start with.
Right.
You're working out of your house. You have two other
guys. Ben and Brute are both in L.A.
In L.A.
I was in Seattle.
And they're working out of their houses.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point, it becomes like, you know what, I guess we should get kind of a studio space and bring on some other people.
Well, you know, my friend Grandpa moved up from L.A., was helping us out with producing stuff.
Okay, so he is your friend. Like, I kept hearing people talk about Grandpa, and I always thought it was your real Grandpa,
no.
But it's not. Okay.
It's a friend,
it's my friend
Grandpa.
Who is an old man, and we call him Grandpa.
I see.
So Grandpa moved up. He actually moved into our basement for a while, and, you know, I was still working from home. And it got to the point where we were, you know, like I had a little boy and, you know, it was hard to work with. I'm super distracted. He's so super cute. I want to play with him all the time, you know. So it was distracting that way. There was another factor that came into it. I forget what it was. Oh, we started having contractors. Like my friend Kaylin started contracting a little bit of animating and stuff. And so like we're sitting around the kitchen table and my wife's like, okay, this is not as cute as it once was.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
Guy living in the basement for a month is cool.
Eight months, maybe not so cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were making ends meet and we were doing as cheap as we can.
It is
indie.
So indie.
And it was a little too indie for my wife. So so we manned up, and you know, my dad owns that, the building that we're in.
Right.
So we actually got like basically almost free rent down there.
Oh, nice.
So,
wow.
And it was
nice.
Like, you've seen it. It's like a shoebox. It was tiny.
Right.
Barely enough room for everyone to sit. But then we brought on testers, and I was like, you know, this is not going to happen at my house. My wife is going to kill me.
Right.
So we, you know, we moved in this little tiny space. And then when the flood happened, then we moved into this stupid warehouse now.
Yeah.
And my dad sold the building, and so we have to start paying rent. But he talked the new landlords into letting us basically pay something we can afford, because we can never afford the rent in this giant, stupid warehouse.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's like we're paying like $1,000 a month instead
I'm curious. So looking back, or I guess taking kind of a wider view of the whole thing, right? You mentioned like this is the first time you like headed up a project. Obviously, this is the first time you've run like your own studio. You're seeing lots of different sides of the business and stuff like that. Like, give us some of the, like, lessons you've learned. I mean, it doesn't have to be phrased as advice, but, like, what's the big number one, like, holy shit, I had no idea about making your own game this.
It costs money. And you need to secure said money, and it's a lot of money. And if you don't have money, you can't make a game unless you totally, you know, have a dude living in your basement. And
so it costs more money than you thought? It
costs more money than I thought. You know, without a dedicated project manager, I mean, I'm not the most organized person in the world, you may have noticed. Without having a really dedicated project manager, you know, schedules definitely are very ambiguous. And so, like, when are we going to do this? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, we didn't have anyone biting on us to, like, finish stuff up, which is good because it allowed us to take the time that we needed to flesh the game out and feel the game out and allow things to sort of bubble up to the surface.
That's one thing about this game. Like, it was very much not a... here's the design doc, we're going to execute on this. Seeing it for me, it was you had a little acorn core, and then you added on it. It was like the most iterative, like organic, and you were playing it from the start. You guys, like, there wasn't maybe so much, I mean, you would bring people in from the outside and have them playing it, but you were playing the shit out of the game. So it was evolving from being played rather than evolving towards a design doc that was set. It's completely different in a lot of important ways from.
But I think when you look at a lot of the really successful indie titles, you see a lot of that. You see, you know, didn't have a design document. You know, and most of the indie guys haven't worked in the big studio system like I had for years, and so they're totally not going to have docs. I mean, I had design docs. I mean, most of my stuff is because I'm such a visual guy. Like, most of my design docs are visual docs,
right?
And then the gameplay stuff is just like, well, this needs to be faster. This needs to be
slower. Not even just indie stuff, but the good, like, I mean, that's what Valve, that's like their calling card, is they fucking test the shit out of, they play test the crap out of.
And I did. I had a lot of people come in and play the game, and I'd be like, you know, what are you thinking? Like, what do you get? What do you not get? What do you like? What do you not like? You know, how is this working for you? Like, are you understanding what I'm asking of you right now? And
so, okay, so, but back to the stuff that, like, that you didn't expect, or what it's
big
like.
Lessons. I mean, I can't even, you know, I could sit here and write a book.
Go. Read your book, chapter one.
You know, it was tough. We were all remote, so we're all working from home. Mm. So we weren't working the same hours and stuff.
It's a lot of Skype.
A lot of email.
A lot of pain in the ass. You can't just call over the cube wall.
Right, right, right. I mean, I definitely look forward to in the future having everyone on site. You know, definitely. I mean, the guys I worked with, Ben and Brute, were both like phenomenal talent. Awesome at everything they did. I mean, we were a really, really strong team. But it's tough when you're just like, you know, having a conversation and like only two of you are there and the other guy comes in later and like kind of misses a bunch of the conversation, stuff like that.
Right.
Let's see. I mean, one of the I guess my biggest underestimation was just the biz side of stuff.
Right.
Like, how much time as the studio head, I'm also the artist and the lead designer, how much of my time was wasted with just the contract stuff, the contract negotiation and searching for publishers and dealing with PR and like all these things that I had to do. But
you say wasted, but that's kind of the stuff that you need.
Right. But it's not what I wanted to be doing. Right. And like, the game is not getting made. Every moment that I'm off doing something else, I'm not actually working on the game. And so I, as a game creator for 15 years, I want to make games. That's why I have my own studio, because I want to make the games that I want to make. So if I'm off at meetings all day and I'm like, you know, talking to banks and I'm like chasing after all this stuff, I'm not actually making the game.
That's the part that I noticed even just so I spent, people might remember, like 2 weeks with you back in like September, just like, I guess, like consulting on the game or just kind of playing it and doing what I could. But the thing that I noticed was just like how many hats you have to wear as like a small or indie dev. It's like, I mean, definitely PR, 100% PR, but also, you know, like managing assets, HR, doing payroll, doing that kind of crap. Obviously, like designing the game and doing the art and that kind of stuff. But then also like contract negotiations, you kind of have to be kind of like the glad hander, or like the guy who goes out and basically makes the relationships and uses them for everything. Right, like, right. You know, we're going to work with you on getting space at PAX. We're going to work with you on getting TVs for, you know, to have them at PAX. I'm going to work with you on getting a mention, you know, on a, like a Japanese weblog or whatever. I'm going to work with you on getting the music because
I'm going to work with these guys to get business cards. I'm going to get new banners for this thing. We got to get t-shirts and those things need to be sent over here. You know, right. We need to find a place to stay. Like, all this stuff is just constantly going. And I ended up working, you know, a lot of hours, because I would spend the first part of the day like answering emails and dealing with stuff and dealing with, you know, sort of internal stuff, like, you know, communications with the guys in different locations. You know, a musician was in Tokyo and another musician was in San Francisco and another sound effects guy was in Los Angeles. And, you know, I'm dealing with contractors who were helping out with some level design stuff, like one guy's in Montreal. Like, so I'm just coordinating mm-hmm. and screwing around with stuff all day. And there's emails coming in all day. And I'm just kind of like farting around in bits and pieces on the artwork, like in between stuff that I have to do. And then at about 6 o'clock, people would start going home, the emails would stop coming in, and then I'd do like a 6-hour stint of like artwork.
Right,
and like working on the video game
part. Right, yeah.
So basically you were working 2 days in one day.
Yeah, it was like 2 shifts. I mean, I was fully doing like, you know, studio manager and then artist.
Yeah. And it's like that happens sometimes. Yeah.
It kind of sounds like us.
Where it's like,
yeah.
Where it's like, oh, finally the weekend where I won't be getting emailed. I can do the work.
Right. Right. But it was tough too, because, you know, the weekends would come and my wife is like, God, you haven't spent any time with us. You know, and the kid is growing up. He's super cute. And
yeah.
I want to spend time with him. So, I mean, the good thing is I have taken most weekends off. All of us have been good about that. Like we work really hard during the week, but then the weekend comes. It's like, just detox, relax, spend time doing the stuff that you need to do. Mm. And come back in refreshed and ready to jump back into it. And it's not like, I mean, I'm always like so excited by getting back into the art and like doing the design stuff that even at 6 or 7, if I'm kind of tired, like I get the second win where I'm just like, okay,
right
now I get to do the fun stuff, you know? So I'm like, I'm stoked that saves for the end of the day. And if I was trying to do the crappy stuff at the end of the day, that would not be,
it would not get done.
It would not get done.
It also seems like the, I mean, and this is not like you're almost kind of, you're not like small fry indie guy, I would say, just by the fact that, you know, Microsoft is publishing your game and whatever. So, you know, you're not just like putting your game out on iOS or whatever, where there would be probably a lot less like paperwork or bureaucracy or whatever you're going to call it. That's another thing that I was surprised about, is just how much there's lawyers you have to talk to, there's stuff you have to figure out, there's contracts, there's milestones.
Just dealing with the whole, you know, the Microsoft machine of getting stuff approved and, you know, talking about defining the milestones,
like the
absolutely, you know, and just, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you're like, wow, this is just, I never had to deal with this before.
Just takes really time. It takes time.
Yeah, takes a lot of time.
Right. Yeah. So now I guess, so how much can we talk about Skulls? So Skulls is coming out.
It's coming out whenever Windows 8 ships.
Okay.
You know, hopefully this year. It'll be on Windows 8 on their App Store. It'll be on Xbox Live Arcade, and it'll be on the Windows Phone.
Cool. So you guys right now are basically like doing bugs and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I was supposed to be done. I'm supposed to be on vacation right now. That's why I'm in Japan. But I'm actually, you know, I've got just a couple bugs left over. But, you know, still just coordinating things like that. But yeah, we're working towards zero bugs. So just squishing bugs every day. And, you know, we have 2 on-site testers that just play through the game constantly in every language and all the different platforms. And just little things that, you know, oh, you know, if you do this and this and this and then this, this animation breaks.
Do you want to, can you say what languages all it's coming out in?
Cool. It's quite a bit. I figured, you know, I mean, this is sort of a gamble for me, and I have no idea how big this is going to be, but worldwide launch of something as big as Windows 8, you know, we should have worldwide versions of the game available, you know? So we did what we had, Italian, French, German, Spanish. Did I say Italian?
Yeah. You did.
French.
Jesus, dude.
E-face.
French, yes.
English, French, Italian, German, Spanish.
Yep.
We have Japanese, we have Brazilian Portuguese, Korean, and Russian, and simplified Chinese.
Yep.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Almost big, anywhere.
Big spickage is what you.
If you're listening to this podcast and getting like even 10% of what we're saying, then yeah, there's probably a version out there for you. coming. That's cool. Like, I'm really interested to see how like the reaction to that too, because you're going into languages that
we're really interested to see if the work we did was any good.
Yeah,
languages that we can't read.
Exactly.
Google Translate is our friend.
But like Russian, you know, and like Korean.
But you know, those are like sizable gaming companies, and everyone in the world has a computer, you know, so definitely. Like this could be a big hit for us.
Right. China and Russia are big PC gaming countries, so
yeah.
Could do well.
That's yeah, you know, Brazilian Portuguese, I've been talking to some other friends, and I guess the scene in Brazil is taking off finally, because up until now, they've had to import everything. They had to import their Xbox. They had to import like these $70-$80 games. You know,
it's seen
like,
as piracy. As that. That's why. That's the reason that other people. Same thing with Russia gave for not bringing stuff out there.
Right. Right.
Is that it was seen as like a pirate market. But Valve, at least anyway, they got a huge reaction in Russia when they actually localized to it, and they. Their take is that all the Russians are pirating because nobody's actually making
supporting
timely markets. Official versions.
But like Brazil now, you know, Nintendo's finally like they've got a thing there now. They're producing a 3DS there. Like it's a huge valid market. Steam is doing really well there, and you know Xbox is actually they have like an official you know Xbox Brazil now. And with the DLC stuff, the software is a lot cheaper. It's a lot easier to get, and you know the digital stuff is just really taking off in these sort of you know growing markets they don't really support the you know the idea of a $70 disc game, especially if it has to be imported and it's not in Brazilian. I mean,
right.
Not a huge market for stuff like that.
Cool. Well, anything else? Any tips for would-be indie devs?
You know, I get this question a lot. People are like, oh, you know, I'm graduating from game design school, whatever. You know, I want to go indie with my friends, or should I go get a job? And I mean, obviously, we've seen guys that come right out of school and do amazing stuff, or guys that don't even go to school and then do amazing stuff, and more props to them. But obviously, I learned a ton about watching screw-ups on someone else's dime. And, you know, even just one game or two games shipping within a studio and just seeing how the whole process works is just invaluable. Like, if you're going to get paid and learn like that, like, why not? I don't know why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, you know, here's the things they did right and here's the things they did wrong. I'm going to try to do it on my own. This is how I'm going to do it.
Right. Get the pens and pencils.
Plus, someday you get to meet Major Nelson, right?
Someday, yeah.
Actually, didn't that whole thing went down today, right? Inside Xbox is like gone. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Inside Xbox is gone in the US. I don't know. I think Major Nelson is still around, but all that shit he was doing is done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The thing that I never watched.
The Skulls of the Shogun budget got too big. They couldn't afford to do all this other stuff. So, yeah, they had to cut corners somewhere.
It was my favorite internet show. About the Xbox, I don't. Yeah, I've never seen it.
Like, I don't know what that is. Wait, no, but did they announce why?
This happened just as I was going to bed last night, so I only caught like the bits and pieces. I saw him like
speaking of bits and pieces. Him. Like, I was just bits and pieces reading the news, and there's like riots in downtown Seattle. Like,
yeah, don't worry about that. That's for another podcast.
This is a Japanese podcast, buddy.
Yeah,
your house is on fire now.
Stay on topic, would you?
Yeah,
it's raining a lot in Tokyo.
Yes,
it is raining a lot.
Yeah,
it's Golden Week.
And I had one good earthquake since I've been here. I'm hoping that's it.
That's true. We did get a nice earthquake in. All right. Well, let's wrap this part of this podcast up. When we come back, let's go into news. We got a lot of shit to talk about.
Yep.
Right, into the news. JJ, news theme.
It's the news.
We got Nintendo Direct happened almost like right after our last podcast.
Yeah.
Right, it was like the next day.
It was like
day.
The day after.
What is that, the third one?
Fourth maybe?
Fourth.
I think.
Yeah. This time from the like soundproof, radio wave-proof Matrix, end of the second Matrix movie chamber deep underneath. 42 levels underneath NCL headquarters.
Wow.
That's like Yamauchi's basement.
In Kyoto.
Something.
He's still down there, isn't he?
Yeah.
just his head. Frozen. Just his brainstem. This Nintendo sealed room blocked off from external wireless transmissions. Wireless waves do not bounce off the walls in that room.
That's crazy.
I'm curious where they're gonna run out of rooms here eventually.
I'm sure he'll find like a
maybe he'll do one on the roof.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good place. It's the summer.
Anyway, so what'd they announce? Let's take it roughly in the chronological order, because that's what Cheesemeister did on NeoGAF on the thread that I'm going to read from. by the way, our news provided by NeoGAF, some AndreaSang.com, some GiantBomb.com. Thanks to those guys for unwittingly helping us out. So, Kirby, they let off with a big...
Yeah, that's actually out in other territories. We're just, like, getting it late.
Really?
Oh, really?
20th anniversary...
The 3D Classics version?
3D Classics version.
Of Kirby's Adventure, right?
Of Kirby's
Adventure. Dreamland.
Yeah.
Oh, Dreamland, really?
I think so. The NES version, right?
Actually, it's out here, too. It's out here as of April 25th.
Adventure is the NES one.
Okay. Right. That's cool. So, Wii Collection this summer, though, they were saying, which the U.S. also retweeted saying that it's coming, but I don't think they provided...
Is that going to be another like Super Mario Collection though? Because that thing was a big disappointment. That was just like a bunch of virtual console games thrown on a disc without any changes at all.
Probably. I'm guessing it's going to be something like that. I would be very surprised if it was anything else but that.
At least it has like the cool manual with the stuff in it.
Also, Pokemon Black and White, Black 2 and White 2.
B2 White 2.
Yeah, they had a trailer. It's coming out in June. Japan, Pokemon AR Searcher, they had that, that was the one, was like a face, it was like a face shooting or whatever.
Yeah, with Pokemon.
With Pokemon. Jake's rubbing his head.
Is Black White 2, are those both DS?
Those are both.
They're both DS. Yes.
They're both DS.
Yes.
Yeah, but you can enjoy it more by playing it on your 3DS.
Why?
Because you can use the Pokemon AR Shooter and the new Super Pokedex thingamajig.
Yes, Pokedex Pro.
Why do you think they would have not done that for 3DS, though?
I mean, probably too late.
55 billion people still own that, and they bought the first one on DS, and so they're just going to buy the second one.
Yeah. Pokedex Pro is a separate thing, though. That costs 1,500 yen. But
wasn't the normal one free, though? That's weird.
I don't know.
It was, I think.
Original Pokedex will no longer be downloadable as of 6/17. Ouch.
Really?
Yep. Guild 01, that level 5 game with the most disturbing box art ever seen. It's like 4 mini games from Super Creators in one. Check out the video for that. Some crazy games. I think we talked about that before. One of them, you play like a weapon like dealer in like an RPG.
Yeah, there's a Japanese comedian made a game for this collection where you are the armor shop.
Yes.
In an RPG, basically.
Another one where you're like routing baggage at an airport.
Yeah.
Remember,
made by
like,
Yute Saito.
That's right.
I remember Yute.
I had made that.
Yeah.
Yes. He of Seaman fame. Errol Porter is the name of that one. Crimson Shroud. Is Crimson Shroud the grasshopper?
No. That's Crimson Shroud is the one that everybody's actually interested in. That's the.
That's what's his name
Matsuno.
From
Matsuno.
Level 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Unleashed Girl, I guess, would be the...
The Suda 51 joint.
Actually, the Suda one looked pretty good, too, though. The shooting game.
Yeah, I played it. I liked it.
Didn't play too
good. No, not that one. We're talking about the one on 3DS.
You're talking about Cinemora.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like that?
This is different. This is like
I do want to get around to trying that.
3D shooter-ish thing.
Dragon Quest Monsters, not going to talk about that. Itrian Odyssey, not going to talk about that. Cardboard Warrior, no. Taiko Drum Master, we're going to say only that it has like a quest mode.
Yeah,
it's like an RPG.
Well, I don't know about that, but it has like a mode where you're like talking with other characters and you run into them, and then I guess you battle via doing
riveting.
Yes, I have to say that game is super freaking fun in the arcade. Like it still today is like one of the funnest like arcade games out there. But it's just
simple fun. Yeah. That type of game is going to be. I mean, a lot of people, Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm were surprised, and it's like, well, these are songs that you like, and it's this tried and true gameplay formula. I mean, it's simple, but it works. Rune Factory 4, Project X Zone, where you can dragon punch a tyrant in front of a giant fetus, among other things. The Capcom, Sega, Banpresto, Namco Bando, Super Collaboration.
Namco Bando.
Yes. That's what I call them from now on. I got to be honest, I'm not super excited about this anymore.
Yeah. Isn't there I heard it last night when I was out with my friends. They call it Ban-Nam now.
Oh, really?
That's what they call Bandai Namco.
It's basically like a sequel to that. What was it? Was it SNK versus Capcom versus
Namco
or whatever.
Something like that.
It's very similar.
The animation looks really good, but they still really haven't explained what the game is.
It's going to be an SRPG, I'm sure.
The animation looked okay. I don't know. The design is a little cartoony for my taste, I guess it has to be to incorporate all those wild different characters. I had a lot of characters from a lot of games. It looks like a kind of a crazy, you know,
I kind of like what I saw so far.
Ridiculously, but. like super combo fighting thing as part of a strategy RPG deal. There's movies for that, so check that out. Mario Tennis Open coming out later this month. Use your Miis in Mario Tennis Open. Cold Set 3D.
With a kind of sexy lady introduction video.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't her
it was, like, that was it made news on Hachima that, like, the woman was kind of a little overly sexual.
What was her name? She had a name that was, like, related to Cold Set.
Yeah,
like,
I don't remember.
She a drawing?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, no, I remember.
Real woman this time.
Hot.
Yes.
They had, like, this little soccer game, too. Karuchobit.
A sequel, actually.
Oh, really?
To the first Karuchobit.
It looks like...
Isn't that the one that's, like, popular in Europe?
It's kind of like every what is it called? Anyone soccer? Sensible soccer? Yeah.
I'm probably screwing that up.
But as you could tell, we are big soccer fans. Big here. Soccer
we're Americans.
Big European soccer game fan. But it actually looked well. I mean, your guys are almost like little pixels, and it is a full price game. But it looked like interesting from a visual standpoint to me.
Looks fun.
The big news. There was a couple big things of big news. I guess the less. Big news was that the 3DS firmware update was coming, which is out now, and you can use added folder functionality.
As far as I could tell, that's all they added too, right? Did you notice anything else?
No.
The only other thing I think they added was patch support. So now,
oh right, yeah, that was
right.
The folder thing I thought was funny because people like a friend of the show James Milkey were like, "Oh, welcome to iOS 2, Nintendo," which is true, like
right.
It's been, I mean, not iOS 2 literally, but like, yeah, okay, folders not like.
I believe it was 4.
Trailblazing functionality, but it did take Apple a little bit actually to get them. But like, somebody wrote back, like, yeah, how about that Vita? I guess Vita's not iOS 2. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess not.
It's kind of it's cool that they added folders. You definitely needed them because I had shit all over my screen. But like, they're still not as user friendly. If you're gonna do something that someone else is doing, at least do it as good, if not better. What's
wrong? I mean, you can make them. You can name them.
For one thing, you can't drag one thing onto another thing to make a folder, which is, you know, to me should just be standard now. I don't know if Apple has a patent on that or something, but. You know, then you have to touch probably the screen on an empty spot to create a folder. Then you got to touch something else if you want to go in and edit the folder name. Then, like, only the first letter shows up as the icon of the folder. So, like, you have to basically make sure the first letter is whatever you want that to be.
Mm. Right.
Which, if you have, like, 5 different folders of Virtual Console games, like, probably most people would, that'd be the first thing they do. I'm going to put my GBA games in this folder. I'm going to put my NES games in this folder. Mm. Like, what letters do you use?
You just write out fuck, and then you'll know. Because what? F is for Famicom, and then the rest is just
that makes
fuck.
No sense at all. Yeah. Today, but
it was just fun because really, like what I saw, people using it for the most was just like writing out messages on their home screen.
Yeah, I guess so. But you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm really glad it's there. It's useful. But
one letter for a folder.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they're all like this really ugly baby blue. It's kind of weird.
So patch support, they're patching something for Mario Kart 7 where apparently there was a big
there's shortcut a and few
they haven't said what they're doing though. They just said they're patching it. They haven't said
no
what
they
patching.
I'm pretty sure they mentioned specifically an issue with Hula Hula Island or I don't know what it's called.
There's some place where you could basically cheat and get around the whole course in like no time at all.
That's happened with every single Mario Kart
but now they can fix it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, some people were complaining about the fact that they're allowing patches, but it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's a bad thing if you let people abuse it, but Nintendo's not necessarily... I mean, to me, like, when you're dealing with the cartridge type thing and you don't have, like, a hard drive in your system, it's kind of a necessity. Like,
it's a...
There's a game-breaking bug in Monster Hunter. That, like, well, not game-breaking, but, like, game kind of ruining. Like, I think they have to fix that.
Not even really ruining. But, like, if something is legitimately broken, it is nice that they can fix it. It shouldn't be like a, well, we'll just fix it in post, sort of.
New Love Plus had, like, tons of problems. Like, if you did, like, certain events at certain time, other events wouldn't even show up. But, like, apparently, it's not just for patches, too, right? You can also add to a game, right? You could, like...
Updates.
You could update a game and, like, add a new level or something or whatever if you wanted to, so...
Well, oh, you mean via patch instead of via DLC? I think that would come via DLC,
I guess
probably.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, no, it wouldn't be because some games aren't rigged for DLC, right?
I don't know.
So they could add the capability to download DLCs.
I don't know. Kid Icarus Uprising, they showed some crap. The soundtrack CD is a little cheaper.
Game is so good.
Jake, you've been playing that a little bit.
And what?
Kid Icarus Uprising? Stay with us. Stay with us.
The new one.
Yes.
Yeah, I really want to like that game. Mm-hmm. It is really awesome.
I'm going to cut your mic for the right parts. Now. I'm just
kidding. But
the controls suck. I get it. Like, everyone was complaining about it. I was like, it can't be that bad. They're that bad.
How long you play it?
I played like the first two missions.
Looking out.
You got to play more.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. An hour
you
got
to play
lot.
More. Is just
you
not
get,
an acceptable
you get
argument.
Used to it. It's and
Gun
people
Valkyrie.
Are really good.
Gun Valkyrie argument. Stamp.
Yeah, after an hour, mute, I'm not feeling it.
I have mutant buttons now, and I'm going
to
use
I
them.
Need to, I really need to play this to determine if it really is Gun Valkyrie or if it is a you just have to play it a bit.
You have to play it.
No, it's just a bad design decision. It could have easily been remedied. Easily.
I would love to play. Everything about that game is right up my alley, and I still have only played, like, you know, I don't know, seven or eight missions in.
I'm actually really impressed. Like, it's fun. Like, I like how you're flying through the world. There's all this
jazz
coming
on
at
the
you.
Graphics and stuff.
Yeah, it looks phenomenal. Like, there's, you know, lots of chatter and combat. Like, it's interesting. The camera movements are really interesting. It's just polished to gleaming, blindingly gleam.
It's
but it's
Hikaru.
But the the controls are they're just it's not a good idea. Like, well, I don't know why they.
Did you finish it?
Yeah, completely, totally.
Can I see your wrist? Is it not bent at some unnatural?
JJ's left-handed, so he's already got, you know, issues. Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm just, you know, dexterous or whatever the word is.
You learn the word first, then you tell us what you are.
The big news: new Super Mario Brothers 2. Bam,
badoosh.
Bam.
Unfortunately, Raccoon not Mario. Modeled after the American Super Mario Brothers 2, which would have
been
kind of
cool.
Cool.
Someday they got to do that. Yeah. Bring back the veggies.
So yeah, that's coming out.
Is that coming out for, is it only August. Wii August. Or is it also 3DS?
No, it's only 3DS.
Oh, sweet. All right, I'll totally play it then.
And speaking of that, some news came out out of a Nintendo fiscal shareholders meeting in late April related to that, saying that New Super Mario Bros. 2 will be available both retail and digitally as a download.
For the same
SD
price,
card.
And Iwata gave some goofy excuse for why that makes sense.
Actually, well, wait, I don't know that they've said it's the same price or not. But
no,
they
did. I just read it.
You said you will be able to buy download codes at retail, and retail will be the ones determining the price.
Right, so you can actually probably get a discount.
But it's possible that retailers will say, hell, okay, it's the same price as the other one.
Right.
As I would expect them to do.
Remember when Japan, like in the PS2 used to like do open price, and all that meant was like they make it like 10 yen cheaper than it like normally is. Like they would never really change. Yeah, like the retailers wouldn't really change much.
But games in Japan, though, when they are released, there is kind of at least about a $10 difference from time to time between stores. Like you could to like a smaller shop and get it at MSRP, but then you could go to Big Camera, which is like the Best Buy.
But you know
here,
what this is
pr- and get it for $10 cheaper.
We won't know till this actually happens, but what I bet is going to happen is you're just going to get like artificially inflated prices to begin with, and then they're going to just drop them down to what they should have been in the first place. You know what I mean? Like,
well, when I walked into Style the other day and I saw that 3DS games are like 5,800 yen.
Yeah, it's crazy here, dude.
Seriously?
Yes. Yeah.
That's like
60,
full blown,
$70.
$75.
Well, that's because the console games are like $80, $90.
Yes.
It's like the
it's
old
messed
days,
up,
man.
Media like, in Japan is way
the dumbest thing is the anime. I mean, I didn't want to get into it, but the pricing on anime DVDs is just stupid. It's like
dude,
it's
books, yeah. Everything, all
it's
media.
All DVDs.
Two episodes for 6,000-7,000 yen is
yeah. It's just it's
they don't
it's,
get it, and insane. People don't complain about it. People just buy into it.
But you know,
so.
The three people that have to have it are buying it, but they're missing out on this whole market of just like give it a casual price and see what happens. Like,
so, but back to New Super Mario Bros. 2, even at the same price. And I realize this is us. It is because it's Nintendo, and you just expect them to be the stodgiest last ones to jump on anything having to do with online. Like, this is pretty big fucking news.
It's huge.
Yeah.
The first day that a mega, mega game like New Super Mario Bros. 2 is going to come out, you're going to be able to download it. Full game.
Well,
and you know what? I'll
guarantee
probably
you the servers are going to crash that day, so,
here's
but
the
we'll
question.
See what happens.
Here's my question, though. They're allowing retailers to set the price of the version, like the card that you buy at the store if you want to download.
Do we know if it's a card, or are you just like, there's like
a code.
Well,
whatever.
It's a code, but however you get it, whatever.
But A, okay, why would you... I mean, I guess if you just don't want to have more stuff, why would you buy the code rather than buying the actual thing if you're already at a retailer?
Because it might be cheaper.
Mm. Because Nintendo will be selling it on their eShop.
So,
oh, you mean as, you don't mean as opposed to downloading it at home. You mean as opposed to just buying the package.
Right.
Some people just don't want the package, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer, like, oh, that's why I like my 3DS. I have, like, all these games on it. And whatever.
No, I'm not talking about the reason why you'd buy download instead of the... Why would you go to the store and buy the card maybe to download it rather than just going to the eShop and buy.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying, because maybe it's $10 cheaper to get it at the store.
Right.
At the eShop.
No, it's not going to be cheaper on the eShop. I think it's going to be cheaper at retail.
So that's my question. You think Nintendo is going to sell it? What price is Nintendo going to sell it for MSRP. On their eShop?
Right.
For
MSRP. If MSRP is $4,800, it's probably going to be $4,800 on the eShop, I'm guessing.
Okay. We don't know.
Because basically, at that point, you're paying for the convenience and not going to the store.
And
that's really weird, though, because then you have Nintendo saying, hey, don't buy it from us. We're going
to
make
it more
expensive.
They need to maintain that relationship with retailers. They can't just burn that bridge. Yeah. I mean, like, I was in, when we were at PAX East, I was at GameStop in Boston, and I saw that
the Boston.
The Kid Icarus remake, the old one, the remake, the NES one that they redid in 3D, that was on sale there on the shelf. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I was like, why would I buy it here? Why wouldn't I just go home? So I went back to my hotel room, went onto the eShop because I wanted to play it, wasn't there. So it was a timed exclusive. Only at GameStop. So Nintendo's maintaining those relationships and keeping the retailer in the loop.
In that case, it makes sense. In that case, it does make sense.
We should also...
Here's the only thing, but like, it ends up being kind of weird if it's like, here it is, you can either just buy it from the eShop directly, or, I mean, I guess we don't know.
I think it makes perfect sense. It's a convenience charge, right? Like, I will probably buy it digitally just the day it comes out because I don't want to go all the way down to the store. But, I mean, it makes sense that they're keeping the retailers active and they can allow them to be a part of the process by having it cheaper where they don't feel like they're getting screwed out of the
right.
Situation.
There could be incentives there, too. Maybe if you buy it at the retailer, you get points on your point card or whatever. I want to say, like, whatever is, we're going to find out pretty soon, but there's a very good chance it's going to be very different what we deal with here in Japan to what people deal with in the West. Because already the retail situation between Japan and America is very different. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of the reasons in Japan, at least anyway, because everybody does their point cards when they go to the big, you know, the Best Buy.
Yeah, now that you say that, like, getting points is actually a big
that might be a reason to buy it. You know, maybe it's the same price, but you get your 10% points or whatever at Bic Camera. And it's like, well, okay, I'm just going to go and get it at Bic instead.
Would you rather? I mean, well, yeah, I guess some people would rather not have the box. But I think most of the people we know would probably at that point rather just have the physical thing.
What if they do?
You can sell the physical thing, too.
Yeah, but you can't bring it with you with all your other games. You have to choose. Like, I don't – sometimes I'll carry my 3DS around, but I won't carry the 3DS around and – my whole game cartridge collection.
Yeah. I'm happy to give up retail, like, entirely. Like, not entirely. There's going to be, like, every now and then there's going to be, like, the game that I've been buying my whole life. Like, I want the physical Zelda or whatever. But, like, for the most part, I'm, like, Super Mario, I'm going to buy on the download for sure.
I would like for retail to be there because, like, you know, selling, I do sell games to fund further purchases.
Right.
So, for me, like, this digital download thing, if it is cheap enough, I will go digital, but otherwise I'll probably just stick with the game. And like, if you know, I end up selling it, then
that's one thing. As an independent creator, like, I love digital because you can't sell it. People can't buy a used copy where I get no cut of that.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's one of the greatest things about that for small developers.
Yeah, well, I'm excited. We'll see what happens.
Be this way on Wii U as well. Came out of the that fiscal meeting, so Wii U software will be available digitally at launch,
which is like right there. It's like, really? Yeah. Nintendo? At launch?
Right. Nintendo, like, getting out ahead of other companies?
Yeah.
Like, that's... Wow.
Well, are they getting out ahead? I mean, everybody else does that now, too, right?
No, they don't.
No. They don't do it for every game, but they do it for some games.
That's what I'm saying, though.
PlayStation
like
3
games.
Doesn't have that.
Yes, it does. Mass Effect 3 was on PlayStation 3. They
but not won. All... Not every single game.
Most right. big
well, they're not. They're not saying every game, are they? They're just saying they're, like, their first... What did they say? Did they say?
Yeah, well, they said Wii U software will be available digitally at launch.
Oh, maybe. It's
I don't know that means all of it, but I mean, we'll see.
Well, at least the first party games, and that's big enough deal. Like
that's big to me too, because I will be forget it. Like I will buy
forget.
That, that's going to be the end of me. Like I buy enough games as it is now, but when they're all available, download day one. Yeah, goodbye wallet.
So one of those games will be somehow like Wii Sports esque. Apparently, they want a Wii Sports equivalent on Wii U, but by that, I'm pretty sure they just mean they want a widely accessible, like, everybody will buy the system for it game. They say, actually, it won't be kind of like the same model.
Really?
Right. And wasn't there, like, a quote from Iwata, like, today saying that Wii U is going to be... hardcore gamers first and then casual second. So there was something like a quote like that.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, that's what they've been saying the whole time, though.
Right. So I'm guessing that game will be something more along the lines of something we would like.
Well, I don't know.
This podcast is going to be so much fun to do when we get closer to Wii U launch. I love all the like speculation.
You realize we have like one podcast left before E3.
Wow. Really?
Damn.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck. Speaking of E3, they're not going to reveal the price of the Wii U at E3, which is kind of
a bummer, but I guess
I'm not surprised, though. It's a little early.
Basically, what you have to do.
Holiday. It's not that early.
No, yeah. It's not early. This is the last major. I mean, but
wait, when is E3? How can we only have one more podcast left?
We're bi-weekly. 2 weeks. As you know, because you listen to every episode.
Of course.
Yeah. What you have to do at E3, and this is a mission for everybody who's going, is go there, enjoy Wii U if you enjoy it, but say nothing but bad things about it. So Nintendo thinks nobody likes it, and then they'll drop the price.
Judge the price based on the reaction at E3.
Right.
Actually. Yeah. That's Wii
U
a good point.
Sucks.
Yes, exactly. Fuck Start Wii U. It now.
Well, I'm
not buying one unless it's under $300.
Unless it's $199.
That's all I'm saying. If that became a hashtag on Twitter.
What did Wii launch at? Was it $249?
Yes, actually. I was wrong last podcast because we talked about it. Yeah, $249. So they've
but
already
it came
said.
With, it came with Wii Sports.
Right.
In Japan, it didn't.
So, What would we say? We don't want to go guess for Wii launch.
They can't go higher than that.
I think it's got to be $249 or $299. I'm guessing.
They've already said they were going to go higher than that.
I'm guessing it's $299.
They said literally that it was going to be more expensive
than
the Wii. Because
of all the cutting edge horsepower in that thing?
Yes, dude. That Fisher Price controller screen does not come for cheap, apparently. I don't know.
I'm still going to say. But yeah, well, I don't know. I will make an official guess as we get a little bit closer. But for now, I'm still going to say $249. I think they can.
I say so too.
I'll say $300.
Have they ever launched a title at $300?
I just think in today's market, and I'm not going to go into the Apple thing again because everybody gets really mad when I tell them about their impending doom. But basically, the market cannot basically withstand sustain a $300 system at this day and age. That is just like a home console. Like, that's not your phone or anything
else.
Like
the Xbox 360?
Yeah, that was 5, 6, 7 years ago or whatever.
Now that you can buy your 360 at $99 with monthly payments of $15.
I feel like new systems. I mean, I'm not saying $300. Well, if it's
taking Nintendo's word that when they say it's going to be more expensive than the Wii, that it's going to be more expensive than the Wii.
But the thing is, it could not have a pack-in, and then it will be more expensive. Because $250 came with the game on the Wii, the first Wii. So maybe it's $250 without a game or something. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Let's get off of the... Actually, I guess there is one last thing to talk about in the Nintendo world. It's that Wii U leaked Rayman Legends video.
Yes.
So, what'd you guys think?
It's doing exactly what we said it would do when the day that they announced that they were looking into that technology or whatever, right? It does this, doing the Skylanders thing.
The near field communication.
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, for me, the thing I like, that was cool, but I already knew about NFC stuff. My takeaway was, I was surprised that they were talking about online and social stuff right off the bat. For a third-party Nintendo game, that's pretty much unheard of. And especially for a launch title, that's telling me the sensors in my brain are hey, they might actually have online for launch.
What online and social stuff?
They were talking about online co-op and social media features.
In the video?
In the video, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
talking about it. Nobody said a word in the video.
I don't know, but I saw it. It's there. It's definitely there.
Oh.
Yeah. And
what social networking stuff?
They didn't specify.
It just said social networking.
Social gaming stuff.
All right.
And
it looked good.
It did look really good.
I don't like Rayman. I don't mind the game. It's not. I just it's not like Rayman's aesthetic really pleases me. But it
looked
very good.
You played the new Rayman Origins?
I bought it. I haven't played it yet. Yeah. I have the Vita.
Awesome. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Rayman Origins. It's really great good. Music.
He's still a little I don't know what the hell he is with no lens.
Whatever. But dude, the backgrounds are amazing. The platforming is really fun.
It's all
the
pace is great.
No, yeah, totally.
And so this game looks visually an upgrade from Origins. But it's kind of ironic, the video that leaks, you really can't tell much about the Wii's power.
This is a 2D platformer.
Right.
The thing I'll say is that I'm bummed. They're saying they're going after the core gamer again, but if they make people play with a Wii controller with the little tiny crappy D-pad and the two buttons that you can really push, it's just...
Well, there's a Classic Controller Pro, right? Which is pretty much your standard game controller. Yeah. So I don't think that's
a
huge problem.
In the main Wii U controller, that would be for multiplayer games. You'd be using the old Wiimote.
Right. But I mean, that video was all these multiplayer people, and they were all playing with the white sticks.
Yeah, I mean, Rayman. I mean, come on. No matter what, it's going to use the Wii controllers because it's there's your multiplayer. You've got now four of them, probably, if you had two before.
or 8 or 9. I
have heard some developers saying that they get tired of holding that big controller after a while, like, you know, like on like games that, like, you know, because it is kind of heavy. I mean, well, I don't know, it's not heavy. It was actually very comfortable, but I could see like maybe getting tired of that big ass thing for like
if you're using a touchscreen a lot, maybe your thumb stretches.
Yeah. So that's actually another thing I noticed is that they weren't using a stylus.
That's right.
Which that is something that is, yeah, I don't think we should read into that too much.
Using a stylus.
What do you mean, of course?
I mean, of course. You're not going to use a stylus on the Wii U.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
No.
No, yes, you are, dude. And yes, you did.
But,
dude, that's
I'm using my thumbs. I'm using the thumbsticks. I'm going to stop, take out the stylus, and go
Yeah, but, dude, there's no double touch. Like, there's no, whatever, what's that called?
Multi-touch.
There's no multi-touch.
Yeah,
like,
but you don't
it has
multi-touch.
A stylus.
The kind of touchscreen that it has is made more for...
They want you to be using the stylus.
But no, like...
You can still use your finger, though, like a DS, though, right?
Here's what's going to happen. The 90% use case... I mean, not that there won't be specific games where you're like... drawing or Pictionary, or you're really just using the touch screen. When you're just using the touch screen, like if it has a stylus, fine, you use the stylus. But like 90% of the time, you're going to be using the two thumbsticks, and then you're going to reach over with your thumb and touch something on the screen.
Have you played DS games where you do that? Like, that sucks. Like, that's not, it's not comfortable, and it's not like touching an iPad.
DS does not have another second thumbstick. There's no, DS is a totally different system. It's totally different.
It's not totally
not
different.
Applicable.
So, for example, with Monster Hunter, which obviously I play a lot, if I put on the Frankenstick and I have my two sticks, either way, even without the Frankenstick, it doesn't matter. You still use the bottom screen to touch for stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I don't know what you call it because I don't know the technical terms, but you there's know, like the DS, you have to push the screen. The screen feels how hard you push.
But the DS touch, well, first of all, the DS touchscreen is the DS touchscreen. And also, the things
the
on
same
it
tech.
Are tiny.
Same
the things
tech.
On it are super tiny.
But my point is, you have to push it. Like, it's not like you just, with an iPhone, I can, with the most graceful, like, light swipe, I can
you
draw
can
like a line.
Sometimes it almost feels like I'm not touching it and it still works.
It's not like that with this. And it's also, it's not multi-touch. So, like, I guess we're sort of getting away from the point. But my thing here is, like, I think it's like, a huge mistake not to have multi-touch.
Well,
we told them that last year too.
My point is that like,
multi-touch
maybe they changed the screen.
It's not about whether or not it has multi-touch. It's about how the screen is, because you're using your two thumbsticks and then you just want to go boop and then
yeah, it's
you
not
don't
just multi-touch.
Take out a stylus, go do something, put the stylus back, then go back to your thumbstick.
Right. It's not. I'm sorry for not being clear. It's not just multi-touch, but it's using this tech that requires that is designed around a stylus input versus something like iPad, which is designed around touch.
Right.
Which
right.
I feel like that's the big problem. Like, I don't want to use something that is basically made for a stylus.
Right.
Which
I agree.
Sadly, the screen is.
I agree, and it shouldn't be that way. But I think 90% of the use case is going to be touch. So I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe which is why I think maybe they changed the screen.
It'd be nice.
It could be, but I doubt it. Something that was interesting to me, I was thinking, like, this video is so well produced. Mm. Maybe Nintendo, like, knew they were going to leak it or whatever. However, if you notice, it has the dev cable hooked up to the controller.
Right.
No way in hell would Nintendo ever allow that. Because remember that time, like, they actually, like, filmed a commercial? They used our apartment to, like, film a commercial for, like, a Nintendo game. And they did the whole thing. And then one of the four players didn't have, like, the Wii condom on. And they were like, nope, cut it.
And that's another thing. Nobody was wearing their Wii condoms.
Right, so that's why I think, like, actually maybe this wasn't officially leaked.
Maybe, like,
Nintendo's really mad about this.
An internal.
It's a Ubisoft. It looks like to me like a Ubisoft E3 video, because they make these goofy ass things.
Yeah, the weird, like,
the Wii.
Evil scientist kid in his bedroom.
Yeah, I was like, and putting a heart on the thing is like, really? Is this the coolest way you can be
showing off the Skylanders?
Right. Because me and my wife are going to play games and put hearts on our controllers.
And they tease the, whatever, the Ezio or whoever the fuck from Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, that dude.
Being in there as well.
I'm super excited about the possibilities for that stuff, though. What is it? NFC?
NFC. Near-field community.
They could just mow over the world with Pokemon toys.
Like, next generation is
gonna
going to be full of toys.
They are going to.
Skylanders is just the beginning.
And that's where the retail gets to stay in too, right? Even if the game is bought digitally, like, you still got to go to the store and buy these toys. And they're like, the retailer's like, okay, whatever.
And for some reason, I wasn't thinking of it as you place something on the screen. I was thinking of it as you use the screen the way you would use, like, a camera, you know, to look at something like AR. But the way they did it in the videos, they just drop something on the screen.
It's basically like RF chips.
It just needs to be near it, really. It doesn't probably even
need to touch it.
Stop playing footsie with me here, Jake.
Cute feet.
You probably don't even. They might make it where you put the toy on the screen just for the feeling of it or whatever.
Think of it like Suica. Suica is like your train pass that you can just tap on this little thing and it'll work. That's basically what it is.
It's going to be awesome.
Maybe
you'll be able to use your Suica to buy stuff.
Maybe. So, moving on. What else? God of War. Some Sony announcements ahead of E3. God of War Ascension for PS3.
Put me in the boat of
multiplayer.
It was really gross. yeah. watching the eye thing.
Yeah, wait, so okay.
See the one-up thing?
People should watch the video before they listen to us talk about it. Real quick, just to get out of the way, it's got multiplayer, revamped combat and controls, promptless minigames, whatever that
means, no big X on the screen.
No Shenmue crap.
And new gameplay features, whatever that means. But the big thing they were emphasizing was multiplayer, and they had a video where it looked, you know, guys were fighting each other. It looked kind of Smash Brothers, I guess, for lack of a better word. I mean, it wasn't a regular fighting game. It was a Power Stone, I guess,
right.
maybe you'd call it. Four guys, not all Kratos, running around doing whatever. Anyway, in the background, there was this huge, like, Cyclops, looked like straight out of the Clash of the Titans, moving around, which is cool. He's all chained up, though.
Right.
Can't, like, basically move or whatever. Yeah. He's all chained up. And I guess part of the game, they also have kind of objectives built into the levels. It looked like people were moving things and kind of capturing things. You kind of kill the Titan or whatever at one point. Anyway, they fucking, like, this poor Cyclops is, like, chained up. They chop his fucking jaw open. As he's chained up, he can't move.
Right.
They jump on him and, like, chop his jaw open so his jaw is, like, two flapping bloody things of meat or whatever.
Because that is essential in killing a Cyclops to cut
and
his jaw
as he's still chained up, grant you, he's not fighting, he's not smashing things, he's not doing anything. He's fucking chained up and can't move. Like, screaming and writhing around in pain, they, like, fucking grapple onto his face and, like, pull him down and then pull his, like, eyeball open, and then one of them is jumping up like it's just about to, like, gouge out his
eyeball. Yeah, they try to pull his eyeball out, and it's just like...
with, like, the hook shot or whatever, right?
For me, it was too much. Like, it was just senseless.
It's, well, the fact that he's fucking chained up is really fucked up.
If you are, like, literally fighting this thing, then that's something else.
If you, like, just saw him, like, crush a village and, like, kill lots of people... and whatever, okay, great.
Maybe you do, though. I mean, maybe they didn't show that part, obviously. Maybe.
Dude, he's chained up. I mean, he's, like, chained the fuck up. Like, completely racketed down, and that's the section they chose. So I read there was actually a write-up on 1UP about this. I read that first before I saw the video, and I was kind of like, man, does this guy really just not have anything to write about? This is ridiculous. I mean, it's God of War. Of course it's going to be bloody and violent and whatever. And then I saw the video... and the fact that the fucking thing is chained up the whole time, you really do feel sorry for him.
Right.
You're like, fuck, man. That's like giant Cyclops in the background.
They should call the mode, like, torture a Cyclops.
It's like dude bro high five mode. Like, it really is, like, the worst fucking... And, I mean, God of War, of course, has always been that way. You've been, like, ripping people's heads off. You've been doing this, that, and the other thing. This is, like... I really felt fucking sorry for the Cyclops.
I'm glad I'm not alone in this. Like, because I saw Gas Reception, they were just like, fuck this guy. But, like, it's weird.
They were like, fuck this guy, about the guy who wrote
the article.
No,
Bob Mackie.
The fact that he's chained up as little as that, it, like, kind of changes everything.
Yeah.
And it's like yoping in pain. It looks like it's, I mean, it's like, aw, like, man, what the fuck? What a bunch of assholes. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of that God of War thing. It just, I guess, it's turned up to 11 or 12 now. To be honest, I mean, I'm starting to feel God of War fatigue.
So. I don't know.
Starting to.
Yeah.
Were you ever into those games?
I mean, I've always liked them. I'm talking about fatigue as far as, like, hearing about a new God of War every 18 months or whatever, and it just being more and more, you know, of the same sort of whatever. I don't know.
I like
multiplayer,
that
doesn't interest me at all either.
Really?
Like,
me too. That is, like...
the last thing I ever thought of with God of War is I want to play this multiplayer.
That is Exhibit A in the every game has to have multiplayer.
Yep.
There are not a lot of
game.
There
crap.
Needs to be more hand to hand online, like, combat games.
And I don't actually. The weird thing is, I don't doubt that they will do a good job because those guys are pretty good at combat.
Yeah.
Like the moment to moment combat. And it's not like God of War doesn't necessarily can't work in that kind of format, but like. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're saying it's not going to take away from the single player thing. They're saying it's purely like an added thing. But to me, it just seems like, I mean, honestly, to me, it was like Dead Space, and I still haven't played the Mass Effect multiplayer. Mm. I know a lot of people swear by it, but it's like Mass Effect multiplayer. Like, really? Like, do we need this?
Yeah.
I think, actually, at the end of the day, I'd rather play Max Anarchy or Anarchy Reigns, whatever it's called right now.
Speaking of which, Anarchy Reigns, that's coming out soon, July 3rd. Bayonetta is in it.
Yeah.
We don't know if Bayonetta is going to be in Bayonetta 2.
Maybe they'll get rid of her. Because
there are rumors that Bayonetta 2 has been canceled.
Yeah.
Which, personally, it's never been announced.
Yeah.
So it being rumored to be canceled is kind of funny. But I personally, I don't believe it.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you see Inaba tweeted that picture of like the Bayonetta chick and then the dude from Vanquish? Because the rumor was that it stars a military dude. So like Inaba like tweeted a picture of like the Bayonetta in front. What's her name? Is her name Bayonetta?
Her name is
Bayonetta. I forgot.
Yes.
That story's kind of forgettable. Bayonetta in front and then like the big Vanquish dude behind her. And it said Bayonetta with like two like obviously like hand painted on top
right,
of the logo.
With a Photoshop.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know anything more about it than anybody else, but if they were going to cancel, it's kind of maybe could be coming out of all of the layoffs and cuts that Sega's had recently.
That's what they sourced in the story.
It wouldn't surprise me, but like I'm pretty sure Bayonetta did all right in America.
Yeah, I mean, globally. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it sold in all territories. It didn't light the world on fire anywhere, but...
I think if anything they've done, though, that's the only thing they've got that could actually warrant, like, a sequel, probably, right? Like, that people would be pretty excited about.
Yeah, I mean, if they were working on it, I wouldn't... Well, yeah, I don't know. I just didn't see much smoke to this fire, but
sure.
Who knows? Could be wrong. They are also working on Metal Gear Rising, of course, which has had some live-action... teaser spots lately. And what else? Call of Duty, Black Ops 2. John, you were excited about that. Blops 2.
I caught Blops 2. I was not excited about it at first. I mean,
2025, Los Angeles, the future.
Finally given up on Call of Duty, I think, this year. But then, actually, I listened to the Giant Bomb guys. Jeff Gerstmann went out and saw it and wrote a big thing about it. I read that, and then because someone online was, I think, talking to you, JJ. Someone was like,
yeah,
you were like ready to dismiss it. And someone was like, actually,
Phil Kohler and
Polygon.
And what's the other guy's name? Adam. He used to be.
Doesn't matter.
Anyways.
But yes. Phil basically was, you know, saying, actually, there's a lot more to it than just the typical, you know, big blockbuster.
Right. They were talking about how ambitious it was. Right. And I read the preview and it's like, you know, there's like this, what you do affects the story.
Convince me. Go. Here, I am skeptical gamer because I am still skeptical. Because here's the thing, like, they're not going to go on forever just saying, hey, it's Call of Duty, we didn't change anything different, which is kind of what they did last time. They were just like, fuck you, it's Call of Duty, eat it. But now they're going to get into this mode, which is like, go back and read some fucking Tomb Raider 3 previews, okay? It was like, hey, we got the new hotness, man. This is not, you know, this is not your mama's Tomb Raider. We got, like, you know, you can ride on a elephant in this one or whatever the fuck was a big deal then. And so you can't, I feel like, know right now whether it's true or not, but they're gonna feed you bullshit whether it's true or not at this point. So but go ahead and give me
I don't want to convince you because I'm not convinced. Like, what I mean,
you sounded convinced.
No. So here's what happened. I went from deciding to write this off, which I you know, you could follow my Twitter timeline. I basically said before that, oh, COD Blobs got announced, I don't really care, I'm not gonna buy this one. Then I heard all this stuff, and now I basically moved into kind of cautiously optimistic about it, maybe want to try it, because A, I like the trailer. The trailer is the same. Let's preface this, basically. We talk about this every year. I play the Call of Duty single-player campaign every year in the same way that I look forward to movies like Independence Day.
Tell me what's different.
It is popcorn.
What is different from that trailer from what you expected from the next Call of Duty?
A few
trailer.
Different things factor into this, but one is I like Treyarch. I thought Black Ops was actually good. I didn't like Modern Warfare 3 as much as I like Black Ops.
But you knew Treyarch was making this game,
yes,
so that didn't change,
right? But you know,
so tell me what about the trailer? Like,
I think that, you know, going into these games wanting the big crazy shit happening, like the airplane scene in the last game or whatever, like, you know. That's all they threw at you in this trailer. It was like a whole bunch of that, which is what they always do. And it was satisfying. It was like, you know, on this highway, like helicopters crashing on the highway. It was like Mission Impossible type crap, you know, like just crazy
explosions. Was cool.
Mechs. It takes place 12 years in the future, so there's like some mech element to it. There's like mechs things going on.
Yeah, the mech thing, actually why I segued into it from Metal Gear, I meant to connect that a little bit better. But the story, what they teased of it, actually sounds very Metal Gear. It's like, here are these drones and war becoming increasingly impersonal.
It's another Cold War.
The main character is like an older version of a dude who.
Well, we don't know.
He's the son. He's the son of the guy from.
Well, no, because the story actually goes back into the past.
The 80s.
It like switches from.
Takes place in the 80s and 2025. And the main character, or at least the main character they revealed, is the son of the guy from Black Ops 1, which took place in the 60s.
And he's the old dude who's narrating the trailer.
I don't actually know. I don't know.
Dude, 2025.
Well, it's kind of, I kind of don't care. Like, I don't really play Call of Duty for the story so much. It's more just for the.
I know nobody.
But
does,
this one, you're going to play for the story because.
So here's why I'm skeptical is because all of a sudden, like, with very little I know about it, I still want somebody to sell me on it. I mean,
I'm not going
to
sell you on it.
I'm being real. I want to actually
keeping it real.
Hear what. It is that's cool about this, but the little stuff I heard was kind of like, oh, it's going to happen this and this, and it's going to affect the story. And it's like, what? Like, I'm supposed to give a shit about the Call of Duty story when even Call of Duty didn't give a shit about its story?
But
they rearranged levels, and fucking shit doesn't make any sense up to the last second. And
it's not about the story, though. Like, I mean, Call of Duty got cool at Call of Duty 2, right? And it wasn't – that also wasn't the story. It was the game – the gameplay in Call of Duty 2 first time was very, very good. It was like, you know, you go from one kind of – what do they call it? Like set piece to the next, working your way through the game with cool combat and different things you could do. It got gradually and gradually more linear up to the last game, which practically held your hand the entire thing. And I think that's the thing that's interesting about this. I don't care about how I can affect the story. I like the fact that they're at least saying that you're going to be able to do stuff that's going to require you to actually play the game in different ways. You don't have to just follow A to point B.
Wait, so we back up. What are they saying?
Like, well, like the one example I heard was. Well, no, just they did. That's the thing is nobody knows.
No,
for
but
sure.
You listen to this whole Dragon Bombcast.
Even they don't know for sure. All they've said is like they, you know, there are going to be points where you can kind of take path A or path B, and it's going to lead you in a different direction potentially and affect the outcome. When they say affect the story, that's not the part I care about. It's just I want to end up in a different place going point A and a different place going point B.
So
you know what I mean?
Play the game.
So at the end, you can choose to shoot the president or not shoot the president.
Just so there's gameplay, like because last game was just you were not you followed somebody the whole way through. Modern Warfare 3.
So it was like more or less Final Fantasy 13.
Probably, but it wasn't.
You're excited
because
they're not gonna do like the same fuck up that they're doing.
I'm excited
because
it's the popcorn thing again, except now there's actually potentially some gameplay because there was almost no gameplay in Modern Warfare 3. It was just like A to B, do the same thing over and over again.
So you're happy, you're excited potentially getting like Black Ops again.
Yeah, in the future, in a cooler environment, yeah, there should be some cool, like, I just like the big explosions and everything. Make no mistake, like, I'm not like, I don't see Call of Duty as like some amazing piece of art or whatever.
We're never gonna have the Call of Duty podcast.
Call of Duty is like,
comes in and talks about the timeline.
This is the first one, yeah.
Call of Duty is like my big.
That actually. That would be awesome.
It would be a 10-minute podcast.
Just do a Call of Duty podcast and only talk about the story.
It's like my.
And when Markov,
nobody
got
would
shot
listen to that.
At the end, I was like, wait, when the fuck did that happen? Was he the Russian guy?
I don't even know who that is.
I don't think anybody could honestly tell you what happened in all three Modern Warfare games. It makes no sense
even
at all.
Even the writers on that shit probably.
But it's like my big-ass juicy cheeseburger in a burrito on a pizza. Like it's just
wrapped
like
in an American flag.
Yes, exactly. Yes, on fire, on the back of a unicorn with the machine gun mounted to it. That's Call of Duty.
And speaking on the back of a unicorn, so you're riding on a horse. I guess that's like the big...
It's a big thing this year.
A big thing. I'm guessing that's like Afghanistan. I'm just going to throw that out there. You're in Afghanistan, maybe in the 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe fighting the Russians. Yeah.
The guy's name is like something Menendez. It's like Raul Menendez. Wasn't that like a real bad guy?
Raul Menendez.
Anyway.
Yeah. Menendez.
That's where
brothers.
Riding
a horse.
I might play it. I was going to write it off, but I think I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm, of course, playing like the super skeptic. I don't really hold anything against those games, especially in terms of multiplayer. Like, they do a lot of really stuff really well in multiplayer.
Which, ironically, I don't even play the multiplayer.
Yeah,
right. And actually, in this version, they're adding like a lot of stuff to make this game ready for like a pro level tournament or something like that.
Really?
Which I didn't read too much of, but they are seriously thinking about that kind of thing, which is good. I think more game developers need to, especially of competitive gaming.
I'm kind of over the whole multiplayer FPS thing, but maybe that's just me getting old.
Like the MLG, like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, those people are going to get more people to play your game. When people see MLG, they start playing StarCraft.
Well, we can talk about that later, but my point is, like, the default position here should be skeptical, and you have to prove to me that you're worth my attention, I guess.
That's fine. I think it's like that every year, though, with Call of Duty, isn't it? I mean, it's more like...
In the past couple times, it hasn't been sold as, no, it's really different and new and exciting.
That's fair. That's true.
It is getting into, like, the Tony Hawk...
Yeah.
Level.
Dude,
of,
I haven't played Modern Warfare 2. I can't believe people are still buying those games.
A few people are buying them.
Yeah, a lot of people. I know. Yeah. It doesn't compute, but a lot of things don't compute.
Yeah. Well,
to me.
On the other hand, you do not have to. I am not skeptical at all, and I am default already love this idea. Is Shinji Mikami, father of the Resident Evil series, yes. RE1 remake, RE4. He announced that he is returning to the genre of survival horror.
Woo-hoo!
With this project Zwei. It's
non-German.
Not the real name. That's a code name.
It's two in German.
It means two, although there's no meaning to that. They said it just sounded cool. he said it's pure survival horror. There's no platform. Expect it for HD consoles, though somebody said that. He is executive director of the game, which makes it sound like he's very hands-on. So this was just an interview with Famitsu. They showed some concept art. You couldn't really tell anything, but no matter what way you cut it, this is great news.
It's pretty hard not to get excited about Mikami doing survival horror.
Yeah. So he started his own studio, Tango Gameworks. They got bought by ZeniMax. They hadn't announced anything they worked on. He obviously did some stuff on
Vanquish. And Shadows of the Damned.
Vanquish was his game. Collab or whatever with Platinum, but anyway, that's super exciting.
Yes.
What else is going on in news? Let's start to get through this stuff pretty fast here now. Okay, Dragon's Crown, which was going to be published by UTV Ignition, is now going to be published by Atlas. This is kind of the side-scrolling beat-em-up action RPG kind of thing for Vita and PS3. Kind of some weird shit surrounding this. On the official PlayStation blog, Atlas came on and was like, yeah, we're publishing this now, and we don't know what the fuck those guys were talking about at Ignition when they announced gameplay features. And a price, yeah. And a date and a price that nobody knew, including the developer.
Yeah.
Which
somebody get Shane on the horn.
I find that kind of odd, too. I'm kind of curious where the truth is in all this, because Atlas is like, that was unknowable. How could you know a release date and a price? That was unknowable. It's like, well, I mean, people decide these things all the time.
Right.
They did say
that maybe the game was like super early. The stuff that we saw in those trailers was probably all they had.
Well, they also have to deflect whatever, you know, bad vibes they can from the fact that they're raising the price. So
they said, well, we, you know, the price is unknowable, but we know that it's not going to be $29.99, which is, I guess, what Ignition had said it was going to be. Maybe at least on the Vita. I think they actually said it might be the same price on Vita and PS3 when they announced
it. Yeah, they did.
So,
oh, it's for both?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. They're saying they said it's 2013 now for sure. That's all they know about the release date. They're saying they're like heavily involved, which people are happy about. More details on pricing and release timing and stuff are coming. But just, yeah, it's going to be more than $30, which... Honestly, like, I think you can't get that. I'm excited about that game. It looks gorgeous.
Yep.
Vanillaware. Check out.
Are you excited?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
This will be the game that they get about all this Vanillaware stuff.
I'm kind of $29.99 excited for this game.
I'm kind of,
catch my feeling. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's like the top end of my price for even for something with the RPG elements for kind of a side scrolly beat 'em up kind of thing with great art. That's kind of my high end. So. Yeah, like, let's not get carried away with what we have here.
I guess I should go back and play the Vanillaware games I have, like, more in depth before I... I just kind of feel like they're one of those things that, like, a bunch of people decided were really important and cool, but I haven't
Well, they have the two aesthetic. People are give them a wide berth for that.
They have not yet hit their stride when it comes to gameplay.
That's my image, basically.
They're still definitely more fun to look at than they are to play.
But. I would say it hasn't come together. Muramasa, I think, had a lot of really good
gameplay. It's the closest.
But it didn't totally gel in the way that, you know, like a Metroid or... I mean,
right.
Sure. It almost kind of got there, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too.
You got the news on their other game?
Grand Knights History. Yeah, for PSP. So that was going to be localized for the North American market by Exceed, and they announced that they are not going to do that anymore. They didn't have the localization resources, so they canceled it.
That is interesting to me because, localization resources, I guess that makes sense. I mean, if that's really the case, then you can't really argue with that, I suppose. Well, I was just thinking because it's PSP, but, you know, you could play it on Vita, so what difference does it make?
Yeah, but a PSP game on Vita is not that sexy, and I mean, I'm guessing just the money didn't work in terms of this is what localization would cost. What did we know about that Japan, game? Right? I was hoping Brendan
a while
would be
ago.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah, Brendan has played it. I haven't actually played much of it, so I don't really know.
I was hoping Brendan would be here to talk more about that. In happier Atlas news, Persona 4 the Golden is coming out in North America for
as
the Vita.
Persona 4 Golden.
Yes.
Which to me sounds like Japangrish, but
this fall. 1.5 times the voiced dialogue of the original, new character, new story events. It's the Atlas team.
I'm excited for that. I'm finally going to. I played Persona like 2 or 3 hours on PS2 and I loved it.
So. PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale was announced. Holiday released. Basically Smash Brothers clone.
Super Sony Brothers.
Let's just call it that. Third-party characters will be in it, apparently. So far they've shown like Sly Cooper, Sweet Tooth, Fat Princess, Kratos, Parappa all fighting. And stages from other Sony games.
Tell me the truth. Yeah. Do you care?
No.
Does anybody care?
Mm-mm.
Yes. Some people care.
The same people who care about like Twisted Metal, I guess.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's got Kratos. It's got. I mean, if you care about Smash Brothers, but you feel like you're.
But Smash Brothers charm is not the game. I mean, it's a fun game, but the charm of Smash Brothers is the characters are cool.
Right.
There's not the only cool character you named in there is Parappa, and like he becomes uncool by being surrounded by all these.
Because like he's put in this art style that makes him look very uncool
and dropped into like the loser like circle. Basically, it's like I don't want to play with any of those characters. Come
what
on.
What if the Yordo is in there? Would you be excited?
I don't shit. Not really.
She would just fall all over your opponents.
Polygon Man might be in there. Who knows?
That would make me excited. There Polygon Man, but yeah. They're not going to do that. Come on.
Some other suggestions that I liked as the third party characters. The floating gun from Call of Duty. Just like a floating gun.
What about Kevin, whatever his name is, the commercial guy?
Yeah, yeah, he'd be good.
What's his name? Yes. I can't remember.
Forgot his name,
but
that guy.
People all
know Kevin Butler. Kevin Butler should be in there.
Anonymous being the final boss. The system update being right. a character I thought was also in the PS3 system update.
See, now you're talking.
It takes like two minutes for the fight for him to load.
In all seriousness, I would play that game before I would play it. I'm not kidding either. Like if they took the piss out of themselves and did all this funny stuff, like compared, you know, then that would make me interested.
How about Mecha Steve Jobs? He's like an iPhone that's attacking in like an iPhone power armor.
Sure.
It's trying to pull off Dragon Punch, but it can't with that iPad controller.
all your moves miss because
it uses the D-pad on the Vita. Anyway, yes.
We'll see.
I don't know. It's pretty bald-faced ripoff of. I mean, to me, it's like whatever. More power to them. They want to make this game. It's not taken away from something else. Go for it. You know, see how it turns out.
I do think Sony should be putting their resources in new games instead of.
That's one thing that I will mimicking. Say. I mean, I've said it before on this podcast. Like, well, I think one of the problems with Sony in the PS3 era is they're playing catch up in every aspect.
They should not do that.
They're playing catch up in online. They're playing catch up in, you know, functionality. They're playing catch up on their store. They're playing catch up in some of their game series and like trying to make a first person shooter series with Killzone and with Resistance and trying to, you know, a lot of aspects. Now they're trying to catch up Nintendo on the Smash Brothers thing, like blazing a trail, you know, like they did in the PS1 era and to a limited degree in the PS2 era, although really they were just kind of the massive
they were the de facto
successor.
At that point.
Yeah, know, and they were starting to get kind of lazy then. But even so,
I miss those days.
As a larger sort of philosophical thing, I start to see this is them kind of playing
catch up
again.
Someone's kind of getting their butt kicked in a lot of places right now. I mean, you look at their TV reports, and they're pretty much losing their butts on everything. I don't know what they're going to do. Like, I'm actually kind of nervous because I think we need the
I'm starting to get nervous too, man.
A lot of the questions we got were about the Vita. We actually asked people for questions. I don't think we're going to be able to get into a question and answer period, but a lot of people are kind of like, are you guys worried about the Vita? How is the Vita doing there? How is it perceived there? The answer on how it's perceived is it's not perceived at all.
Right.
Most
people don't even know it exists.
It's not a blip. It's not the stories haven't really started coming out about what a failure it is. Like some people have picked up on the weekly sales numbers that
are they still going down?
Really
bad. Dude, it got outsold by like Wii last week.
Has it broke under 10,000 a week?
I don't know. I don't follow them that closely. I just know it's not doing well.
It's doing very poorly here, and the horizon for like big Japanese releases is not,
bright,
super sunny. And people are like, well, what could it do? I mean, kind of the sad thing is the the one like slam dunk easy answer to that is Monster Hunter.
Yeah. Well, in Japan, yeah.
In Japan.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying.
But yeah, that sort of, it really goes to show how Monster Hunter fueled PSP's life by like giving it like a platform to survive in Japan, which then made it worthwhile elsewhere. Without you take away the Monster Hunter and your PSP becomes like
really
an overpriced gadget that deal. Doesn't do much besides play games.
So every single store I've been into since I've been here has just, you know, every big display for the 3DS has been, it's been Fire Emblem and it's been Monster Hunter.
Fire Emblem has sold actually pretty well too. It sold almost 300,000 copies its first week.
That game is so good. I didn't get a chance to talk about it earlier. Yeah. I won't get into it, but that game is really awesome. 27 hours, and I can't stop playing it.
I'm nowhere near your playtime, but it's great.
So like Radiant Dawn for the Wii sold like 180K total its lifetime in Japan.
And this outsold it in 1 week.
This like far outsold it. It sold like 274
its so first good, week. Dude.
That's pretty damn good for a Fire Emblem game. But yeah, I mean... 3DS owns the mind share. You see...
What are the sales looking like on 3DS a week? Does anyone know?
I don't know the
weekly. I think it's 70,000, 80,000 a week.
70 or 80?
I mean, it's doing well. It's doing well.
Right. It's better than... It's like a... Isn't it like DS levels when it was
selling,
good.
Yeah, isn't yeah. Like they're top selling hardware ever at this point, I think.
Yeah, well, it was the fastest just to fastest. Like certain numbers. Yeah.
That's why when the oncoming like zombie Apple apocalypse, we got to come up with a word for that. Apocalypse happens, you know, Nintendo's going to be the lone survivor on the top of the hill with their franchises.
Apocalypse with two P's.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I want to be convinced because I do love my Vita. Like I love the hardware.
It's such an awesome piece of hardware. But yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you know, I don't even know. You know, Call of Duty is going to come out of it. God of War is going to come out of it. I'm sure Gran Turismo is going to come out of it. Like a lot of these franchises.
And like 2022.
But those are the kind of games that you want to play on a handheld necessarily. I want fresh, cool, original content that was made for, you know, a Vita experience. Mm. I don't want to play Call of Duty on my Vita.
Japan doesn't really do a good job. They haven't really grasped that concept well in the past few years. All Japan is doing right now is kind of scrambling to reissue the stuff that they did when they were on top of the scene. You know, that's why you have all these HD remakes and everything else. Like there's not a lot of Tokyo Jungles basically coming through the pipes, you know.
Speaking of which, savior of the Japanese game industry, Tokyo yes. Jungle. There's a multiplayer video where you could
I keep thinking like it's just a jet lag, like I must be hallucinating.
No.
When I see the videos of that game, I'm like, what the hell is
it
going
really
on?
Exists.
Here?
Act
how
one,
does this exist?
You're right. A Pomeranian.
Thank God it exists.
Owners have died, and then you decide you have to go out and forage for shit on your own. You play a deer in other levels. There's all these different aspects. There's dinosaurs, apparently.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
That might be part of the reason why humans...
You can dress your dog.
Yeah. The multiplayer actually looked interesting. It's kind of like a... So you have like a stamina, hunger, health meter. Looked like there was some kind of capture the flag type elements to it. Anyway, that's coming
out soon.
When is that
out?
Is
it June, I think? I think it's June.
I don't remember. We said it on an earlier podcast.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Go just listen to all of our earlier podcasts to find that out. What's not coming out, sadly, Dancing Eyes, which we also talked about on our earlier podcast, the game where you play a monkey stripping girls.
It's a puzzle game.
Puzzle game.
Wait, it's not coming out? Game.
No.
Yeah,
the remake of the PS Move remake of the 96 arcade game we talked about, not coming out, canceled for reasons not given. So sad.
Maybe because nobody owns a PS Move.
Yeah, well. Soul Sacrifice. We were going to talk about that last time, but we didn't.
We were. Yeah. We had all like pulled together some guesses on what that might be. They still haven't announced it, huh?
Right.
So
some people thought it might be.
We know it's a Vita game.
It's a Vita game. It's coming from Sony.
Right.
They put a little teaser in Famitsu. Art that looks, you know, surprisingly like along the, like Western fantasy. So people were assuming maybe it's Dark Souls, maybe it's Demon Souls,
maybe it's Monster Hunter.
So
yeah, maybe, you know, we were talking about this here in the office, but you know, I don't know if you guys listened to our podcast back when they had the PlayStation Heaven event, but Keiji Inafune had this big speech about how he's got this like mind-blowing game coming out, but then said absolutely nothing about it and just showed like a book on a table and referred to himself in the third person.
Right.
But what if maybe it's related to that? Could it be? I don't know. Then again, there was somebody who was saying that like the art looks just like from software.
Right.
And you know, artists for Dark Souls.
If
whatever.
It is,
you'd hear, and they got the word Souls, Soul.
You would know.
If it is a portable Dark Souls or Dark anything,
which it's not.
Actually, you know what? I don't see Sony public. Yeah, you know what? Sony lost Souls kind of foolishly, and now I bet you From is never going to go back to them because they can make all that money for themselves. Why would they need
would be
Sony?
From, and there would be a big deal around it, and it would not be.
Yeah. So Sony's going to use the word soul and do something that's similar to. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
Also in Sony land, Nasne, JJ.
Nasne!
Oh, God. The standalone Torne-like DVR device that could work with your PS3. It's coming out in Japan anyway. 500 gig hard drive, July 18th, about $175, $180. Looks like a little mini PS3.
Yeah.
You can use it with your Torne. You could record two things at once. You can stream to your smartphone, your Sony tablet, your Vio. You can record, set up recording over the web.
Bottom Torne, line, what yeah. is it? It's Torne.
It's not quite as good TiVo, but you can do it in Japan.
It's the best you can get in this country.
Who names it their thing Nasne? How do you even spell that?
N-A-S-N-E.
Does it mean something? It must mean something in some language.
Kind of if dream drop distance means something, then this
dream drop distance is brilliant compared to Nasne. Okay, dream drop distance is
okay.
like.
Well, what about 243 over 365 or whatever the
thing
fuck
is
that
like? Who's naming
somebody? Let's yeah. put it that way.
Nasne.
Yeah. But well, and it that's the companion thing to Torne.
I just want right. to grab Japan by the throat sometimes. What are you doing? Like, come on, people.
Maybe it makes sense.
It's catchy in Japanese.
Come on, Nasne is catchy. It sounds like eggplant.
Nasne.
Come on, dude. Yeah, no.
It's like Ramune Nasu.
Yeah. I just, yeah.
Torne. Nasne. Whatever.
Torne is a little catchy. Nasne is not.
Anyway, next.
So, yeah, that the only reason I mentioned that is it's kind of interesting. Next gen consoles incorporate any kind of DVR functionality. Sony is like cutting their teeth right now in Japan,
yeah.
messing with this stuff. So, if you have any interest in it, you could kind of check it out. Honestly, it's not as good as TiVo was like 10 years ago. you can only check the next week of stuff to set up a recording for it.
Yeah.
Once you set up a recording, it doesn't know by the name of the show. It just basically. It kind of knows, but it knows mostly by the time that you set, so it keeps right. recording even after the show ends, yeah. which is weird.
I think that the week ahead thing or whatever, I think that's just like a cultural thing because Japan's like TV industry doesn't know what's on TV a week ahead either.
That's
you know,
that's fucked up.
No, I know,
that's
it's stupid.
The
but.
End of the line, that's my, yeah, that's yeah. their problem.
And we, this is coming from a company here that has like three active Torne users, I think.
Yeah.
You,
yeah.
It's, Mark, only, JJ, it's the only thing you can get.
I use it a
no,
lot.
No, I know.
But
that's not like $800.
I know. No, I know. I know. It's sad though that you have to be like using something that's like outdated by like a decade.
Yeah.
Back to canceled Gameland. La Mulana, sadly, not coming to WiiWare anymore in the US and Europe.
That was
from Nicholas.
Interesting.
Yeah,
and
this is like some back and forth. He said, she said, she sells on the seashore about why that is exactly. It sounds like it wasn't passing cert. They were really. Been working on it for forever. And
I really
it's been
wanted
delayed
that game.
A lot, and a lot of people did.
It's coming out on PC. Buy
it
on
is
PC.
Coming out on PC,
but so not by Nicholas
now. No, it's,
from the original developer.
Yeah, but I think they were always going to, right? Because to publish on Steam, you don't really need anybody. Mm. I think so.
Right, but did you see? I haven't been following all the controversy, but did you see like how the Nigoro guys were like tweeting like they found out about this like the way we did on the internet
the
or whatever? Like,
or whatever. Yeah,
sounds
I saw
ugly.
That. It seems like it's not.
I'm sure there's more to it.
Exactly.
Than,
yet. Yeah. Yeah. What exactly happened? But the end result is sad. But apparently, one interesting thing out of it is that apparently WiiWare is like dead.
Yeah.
Even
right.
to where it was.
Real talk, like that game coming out on WiiWare probably better canceled at this point.
WiiWare was kind of dead the day it like turned up. I mean,
well, but people were still buying a little.
Bit. Apparently, there was. I mean, like the BitTrip games
BitTrip
and like
did okay, I think.
Cave Story maybe even did.
That's true.
Did, But now it's like it just fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit really is in people's closets. Or.
But aren't you going to be able to play that stuff on Wii U as well? Like, so
that's
maybe.
A good question.
Why don't they just have it at Wii U launch or something? You
so
know?
That's a very good question, which we haven't really touched on, which is what do all of the hardware makers do for next gen for your games that you have
they
to
charge you
download
for them.
Games?
Better let you. They better... let you basically carry your stuff over with the same account or whatever.
For
if Sony
free,
tries to
no
charge
problem.
Me for all the PSN games I got or whatever, I'm going to Sony with a rocket launcher. Like, yeah, I'm not paying for those games again that we already bought.
So you to you, it's just like, it's not even a question, it's expected. Next system I get,
yes.
I get everything that I owned moved over.
I'm sure they'd
no
like
payment,
to see it. I'm
no.
sure they'd like to see it as I bought the license for that game on that system. But unless you're doing something to the game to change it and make it better for the uh-huh. new system, and it's just the same exact thing, then no. I bought the license for that game, wherever you put it. you know,
it's how it worked on the DS to the 3DS. So.
Yeah, yeah. I think I should say I'm not worried about this being a problem. But the way Sony handled the PSP thing in Japan makes me slightly nervous. Like they're gonna like screw that up too. But
also
we'll
like the idea that you bought something once and you own it forever on all their systems probably like scares the shit out of those guys. Like they're probably not happy about that, especially if you're re-downloading it on your new system, and everybody's gonna be re-downloading. You know. 2 million, 3 million people are going to be downloading Castle Crashers again on the new system or whatever.
Nintendo, here's a blank check. If you want me to buy Super Mario Brothers again, put it on Wii U and give it achievements, and I will buy it again. that is the answer. It's right there in your face.
That's good for you, but for other people, it's like, what the fuck? I'm paying for achievements? Like,
but I mean, ridiculous. Okay, well, that's the thing, though. You're not going to buy the game again anyway, but if you want people to actually have a reason to buy it again, give them a reason to buy it again. Update the graphics.
The coin things to little to 25. All
right, now you're just abusing
that's
me.
That's worth at least $300.
But I would absolutely buy a lot of those virtual console games if I could get something for playing them again, achievements or whatever. And I think a lot of people would.
Okay, wrapping up, Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch, English PS3 trailer came out.
I need to check that out.
Our friends over, you haven't watched it yet?
No, I'm excited, though.
Good. It's like...
yeah, man, Richard's doing it.
For the little sidekick dude with the lantern for a nose. He's got like a, I don't know, cockney, you call that? It's kind of funny, the end of the trailer, though, it sounds, I don't know, I actually don't know what he's supposed to be saying, but it sounds like he says, porn star! I swear to God, he says, porn star! Like, he's casting some spell or something, but, yeah, so Richard Honeywood's been on the show before.
Yeah, super friend of ours.
Overseeing that.
Yeah, very happy.
Seems like they're doing...
8-4 super friend.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seems like they're doing really good by the voices, at least. It's now coming out next year, 2013.
By Namco Bandai, publisher of Tales of Graces F
for PlayStation 3
and 8-4 joint.
What did I call them?
Bandam.
Bandam.
That's mostly it. A couple just sort of general things. We wanted to talk about Sword and Sorcery. There is an event going on. They have an AV jam May 11th through the 13th.
This is super cool.
Yeah, so basically it's like anything involved with sorcery, like fan art, cosplay, people remixing albums, just basically anything. If you're a fan of that game, check out swordandsorcery.com and you can find a link there. Craig, the Super Brothers, is going to be like releasing some new art, and Jim Guthrie is going to be putting out some music.
Oh, no shit. Awesome.
Yeah, super excited.
Game's out for Super Improved for iPad 3 now. And
yes, I downloaded the Retina version.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Have you looked at it?
Yeah, it looks, I mean, you know, the game was already super beautiful, but it's now slightly higher res and super beautiful. Yes.
So, check that out, or take a picture of your dog in... it's Dogvella cosplay and send it in to that.
That game is on it's on Steam now as well, mm-hmm. Sword and Sorcery.
That's right.
Which is
was that
awesome.
Not like that our last podcast?
I don't know if we talked about it or not.
But it's not available in Japan.
It's not available in Japan, though. I wonder what's up with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could be a story there.
Steam. Anyway, what else? I know there was some other things to talk about. You can now, of course, comment on the giant bomb boards. We've gotten a lot of good feedback there. So please find our page there. It's like /2. It's like giant bomb podcast /2, which is like, hey, wait a second. It kind of reminds me of when we were back at Ziff and there was an email string called flagship for EGM. Because EGM
everybody else got really mad that we did that.
Yeah. EGM called itself the flagship magazine.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it was like a very elitist thing. But apparently we podcast 2.
That's all good. They worked their asses off to even get a thing up for us. Totally. And like some people have commented that it's like spelled out 8-4 play. Yeah. That's actually a tech thing. Like they're going to fix it. Don't worry.
But yeah, comment on us there. Say hi. Tell them thanks for bringing us there and what have you. Support Giant Bomb in any way, shape, or form you can. What else? Anything going on in the next 2 weeks?
Let's see. When are we back again? We're back because we got to start thinking about E3, right? So, yeah, we do have – we'll have 2 more episodes before E3.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have 1 more in 2 weeks and then 1 at the end of the month right before some of us ship off.
Episodes.
Yeah.
Jake, 17-bit, where can people find you on the web?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jakeooza, JKOOZA, and please check out Skulls of the Shogun at www.skullsoftheshogun.com, all one word.
Could you put that www in there?
And how about
HTTP
your
HTTP colon
slash
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 What about 17bit.com?
17-bit.com. And I promise that we'll put cool stuff up there soon.
But you can see the logo.
As soon as I get back from vacation.
Stuff. Maybe buy a t-shirt at some point. You need to make the other t-shirts different so that maybe not with the sparkly goals, so that ours are special. Still exclusive.
So you would deny everyone else
to
make yours special.
Yes, I would.
Exactly.
Yeah, they are pretty cool.
So, and Skulls, you mentioned coming out when Windows 8 comes out. Also on Windows Phone, XBLA. You can shitload of coverage all over the web if you're interested in reading more about it. At your local library. What else?
Indeed.
Where can you find us?
You can find us at 8-4.jp or on Facebook, 8-4.
Please
Twitter.
Like us.
Yeah.
Like Skulls the Shogun on Facebook, too. I've been really lazy about that. I need to do it better.
Why don't you put something behind like a wall, and then if you get enough likes, the wall will slowly crumble, and you'll reveal like a character in Skulls the Shogun.
The Kool-Aid Man.
Well, I guess there's a couple of characters I haven't shown yet. Yeah, okay. promise.
Get on that.
There you go. Twitter
behind a wall to get
we do
Facebook
we need
likes.
To get a wall to begin with. We'll have some news. We got some cool stuff to announce, actually not the next show maybe, but I think the one we'll have to work out the timing, but we've got a really cool announcement coming in May. We'll get to that, I guess, either next show or the one after.
Cool.
And you can find us on Twitter at 84play, or my Twitter is John TV,
Mark MacD,
JJ
SPRSK.
Brendan is Brendan Beyond, and Hiroko is Hiroko 84.
They don't get mentioned when they're not here. No, that's not cool.
Forget what I just said.
Show up, and then you can
then you get your Twitter followers.
You're not following them.
Tweet them and tell them you're upset that they didn't show up on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a holiday, and it's like noon, and we were drinking, so we don't actually fault them for not showing up. But I will give us all a little extra pat on the back for showing up.
And it was nice to be able to do a long episode because we love doing these long episodes. Yeah. But we're working here. We got
we're
games
always
to translate.
In a hurry. Actually, I know that's why our last one was so short. So we need to figure something out so where it's a little more.
We need to do a Kickstarter so we can do these during the day.
I'm proud that we got through a podcast without John looking at his watch or doing we're running
because we're in the middle of the day. I can do this. I can do this in another 3 hours if you want.
All right. Well, no, I don't think anybody wants that. So let's see. You can find us, like we said, giantbomb.com, neogaf. There's usually a good thread there. Definitely let us know what you think. Sorry, people who tweeted your questions, we kind of got to some of them obliquely, but thank you for sending them. We tried to get the Skype technology worked out for the call-in thing. We're going to get that worked out. We're going to probably at least have people leave question voicemails.
Yeah.
Watch our Twitter accounts for news of that. But definitely, really, please do let us know the parts you like, didn't like. How bad Jake affected our ratings, we'll find out in the coming weeks.
Also, don't forget the 8-4 bump with the Kickstarter.
That's right.
Republic's only got 8 days to go.
That's right.
They're
PC
moving.
And Mac now.
Yes, they're up.
Speaking
they're,
of PC and
they're
Mac.
Starting to move, but they've only got like 8 or 9 days left, so show some support.
Check
if you
want
some cool stuff.
On that site, you can see what the game is like. The PC and Mac version is going to be kind of its own game, so it's going to be a different original thing. You can get both games, I think, for like $20, which is
it's
super
really
cheap.
Yeah.
So we want to really try to make that happen if it can. So give to that. Otherwise, I guess that's going to do it for this episode.
Yes,
so,
thanks for listening.
Yep, thank you very much for listening. Jake, why don't you take us out?
Porn star!
Whoa, what's all this, Anna? Curse lifted, is it? Tiny, I'm free! Free. Welcome to my world, Holly Boy.
Another world? So-called savior from the other world. He must be destroyed.